did.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work, so I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
You see the game.
This is your If That Game Doesn't Put a Chip on Your Shoulder, I Don't Know What Will. Leader Fan Radio Network.
Did you see the game?
I did. KFAN.com. 1 minute, 58 seconds past 3 Central Standard Time. Bumper to Bumper Show back. 3.5-hour tour. On a seasonable Monday here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My name is Dan Barrero. I host the program. Garzy is the producer of today's show. And we are pleased you chose to join us today. Bradshaw and Brian inbox rebooted, booth@cafen.com. Let me give you the Borton Volvo menu for today. Ben Lieber, Nacho Lieber, 340. Vikings defensive coordinator Andre Patterson, 430. You usually get the Vikings report at 4:30, so you'll get a short version of Andre, and then you'll get the long form Andre today as well. He was very instructive on a number of the breakdowns that definitely contributed to the Vikings' three-game winning streak coming to a screeching halt at the People's Stadium. Speaking of the people, they've spoken. They're demanding another audience with or from Bill Maurice, Mayo Clinic big knocker. There's a lot of newsy stuff to get to with him. I don't know. It's a short week for us. It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday week. So this might, you know, end up being his appearance for this week. He's been pretty accommodating if stuff breaks, but he will be with us this evening at 5:30. We'll find out how he took the Hoosiers' moral victory over the Ohio State Buckeyes, if he has recovered from that.
Do you think he has the candy stripe, not just pants, because I know everybody that went to IU has to have at least one pair of those. But did you see the football team warming up in candy striped shorts? Those are sharp.
I believe he wears candy stripe khaki pants to the office, to Mayo Clinic.
Wouldn't surprise me.
When you're big knocker, you can wear whatever you want. What are they going to do? They're not going to mess with them.
You write your own rules.
Yeah, you do. You make it up as you go. We'll find out. You may have some candy stripers. It's very, very possible. So that is the Borton Volvo guest lineup for today. We'll have several Vikings-related talking points to get to before this program, as I mentioned, wraps up at 6:30. We got a lot to try to condense into 3 days because Thursday, the Fan has learned, is Thanksgiving, a full day of football on the Fan, and then we're both. Well, you're traveling with the Gophers, right? You're on your way to Madison.
Correct.
The Gophers Badgers game. That's a Saturday. Is that a nooner?
It is a 1 o'clock.
One o'clock start. That's an interesting time.
It's 2020. I think they're just making up TV windows.
1 p.m. against the devastated Badgers, who took it on the chin at the hands of maybe one of the great Big Ten defenses in the history of the Big Ten. Northwestern still.
5 turnovers.
Undefeated.
Yeah.
But bottom line is you're out of the equation Friday. And I'm going to take the traditional Friday day after Thanksgiving as well, our traditional day for going to get the tree. By the way, We came perilously close to making the switch back to the artificial tree.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a back and forth?
It was a back and forth. I was ready to be convinced either way. I have gotten accustomed to the real tree and enjoy it. But
when you love taking the axe or the saw,
it's a
getting
hassle.
Out into the woods and sawing it off. You love that. You've always loved
putting
that.
It on the top, tying it up to the top of the 4x4, the whole bit. But I think ultimately decided to go with the status quo. Thinking that, like a lot of people, we pretty much made the call that we are not leaving for Chicago this year for Christmas. So then you go with the old, well, if you're going to be around the house even more, all the more reason to have that authentic.
Make it authentic.
Pine smell.
I love it.
So more on that later. I mentioned off the top of the program, we are indeed your, if that game doesn't put a chip on your shoulder, I don't know what would, leader. What a, well, put it this way. I have heard a minimum of two fan radio network hosts say exactly what I also believed as that game was playing out. I heard PA say it. Dan from Woodbury says he said it, and I'm saying it. At no point did I think we were going to lose that football game. And I'm not talking about how cocky I was going in. I did think we'd win, although I thought the spread was thick, a little too much. But based on the game flow, even after a troubling first half in which Dallas should have been further ahead, I never felt we were going to lose that game. I really didn't. And when we went up, what did we go up, 28-24? We went up 28-24. I fully expected we were going to get the ball back and we were going to do it. We're going to score again.
Yeah, we were dealing.
We might even end up with 42 points. I thought we might go. How many touchdowns did we get in the second half? Was it three? Were we 3 for 3 or 4 for 4? Yeah, we only had 9 points at the half.
Yeah,
right?
So we had 3 in the second half.
I was convinced we could go 5 for 5.
Mm-hmm.
Every drive would end in a touchdown. I really was. I mean, that's how state-of-the-art, efficient, effective, everything looked about this offense. Now, I know Dalvin wasn't running as wild as he had, 2 weeks ago, but even there, I thought, he's starting to gash him a little bit. Nice little screen pass, etc. Well, he'll contribute, and we don't even maybe need him to contribute again because the wide receivers are just they're wide open everywhere. So
tight ends are involved. It was great.
That's a chip in the shoulder finish, man. It really, really is. Even if you acknowledge the obvious, which is this is just not a great football team. So it's a flawed team. So if it's flawed, you say, well, can you really have a chip on your shoulder finding a way to lose it? Yes. I would say yes on the basis of the way the thing played out. Part of it is I have so little faith in the... is it the Polish rifle or the red rifle?
Andy Dalton?
Dalton's the red rifle.
Yeah.
Jaworski...
Oh,
the Polish rifle.
Ron Jaworski?
Ron Jaworski was the Polish rifle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Got to get your rifles straight. Have we ever had a quarterback named after a rifle?
Man, I don't think so. I'm just trying to think. Whiskey Wade.
What is the best moniker, nickname we've ever had for a quarterback? Would it be Whiskey?
I mean, if you count the gunslinger, I mean, that's number 4.
Yeah, that's true.
We had him for a year and change.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess
I mean, he's not a rifle, but the gunslinger.
Here's the problem I have with the gunslinger. It's really not just his nickname. It's a nickname that has actually been used by other. For you.
Yeah, I mean.
It doesn't belong to anybody else.
Get serious.
There have been quarterbacks and players called gunslinger forever.
Yes,
so it's
true.
Not unique to him in the way that the Polish rifle was unique to Jaws. The
red rifle
was unique to. What's his name? What's the quarterback's name?
Andy Dalton.
I didn't think he had it in him either. What I probably underestimated was this defense coming back to earth, which it most assuredly did in a number of very painful ways if you're a Vikings fan, including, what was it, 180 yards rushing, 180 yards rushing, including the 42-yard touchdown run, not by Zeke. Who was the
Pollard got that one.
their change of pace back.
Now you change the pace.
And, of course, a certain cornerback. I tried hard, and you'll hear it at 4:30. I tried hard to take the pressure off Chris Jones. I tried to suggest, as has been suggested by others, that part of the breakdown on that play was the Vikings' defensive end did not, what do they call it?
Set the edge.
Set the edge.
You were naming names. You had a little like the pointer. You were pointing at the film with Coach Patterson to go, what about this guy? Is this guy where he's supposed to be? What about this guy?
According to Patterson,
everybody was.
It's all on Chris Jones. That actually, there hasn't been enough emphasis on Chris Jones's breakdown regarding that basically he was the only guy left to make a play. He was there and he didn't make a play.
Everything happened sequentially for him to make the play, and he didn't make the play.
The Polish cannon?
Who's that?
I thought it was the Polish rifle. Jaws for me was always the Polish rifle. How about Two-Minute Tommy? Two-Minute Tommy is in Kramer.
Yeah.
Faithful listener to the program. Welcome back, Tommy, if you are listening. That's a pretty good one. That's specific to him and his name, and it's quite alliterative as well. We'll take other nominations before this program is done. But I honestly said, no, that the way this offense is purring, they may not score a touchdown every time, but they're going to get points every time. And so it's going to put so much pressure on the Dallas offense that even with a defense that was playing its worst game of the last 4 weeks, we were going to be able to survive it. We didn't survive it. And we are back to 4-6.
With
our dream of 500.
Yeah.
The whole dream was what? Give yourself a path to 9-7 without putting the pressure on that you have to beat either Tampa Bay, or New Orleans. Is that here?
New Orleans is there Christmas.
Is there as well. You're right.
Yep.
That was the whole point. Now, to get to 9-7, to even get to 9-7, that we're going to have to beat one of them. Now, again, mathematics indicate we could still go 10-6. But that literally means not a single hiccup. And is anybody smoking that particular ganja? Or are they drinking that Kool-Aid on the basis of what we've seen? They have it in them to be better than they've been, as they showed the last few weeks, and to be a cute little club. But 6 in a row?
For Boudreaux?
For Odenebo? That ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. You know that. I don't know. I know that. Now, you're a Vikings fan, so maybe you'll say, I knew it was coming. I sensed it.
No.
I felt it.
No, I felt the same way you all felt. Once they reestablished things in the second half and went right down the field and scored, you said, all right. They've centered, right? Dallas came here to play. They're like a game and a half out of the playoffs, miraculously, because the East is so bad. You knew they were going to come and probably fire one of their last bullets.
Yeah.
Speaking of guns.
Yeah.
By the way, we did have a gun quarterback that you're forgetting that an emailer or a tweeter reminded both of us about.
A gun-related quarterback?
Yeah. Christian Ponder was known as the Nerf gun. Forgot about him.
The Nerf gun, yeah.
Very hard.
It's apropos.
What about Garden Hose Johnson, Teddy Two Gloves, and Baby Hands Culpepper?
Baby Two Hands Culpepper?
Baby Hands. He had the little hands.
He did have the little hands. Yeah.
But anyway. Teddy Two Gloves is what we called
Teddy Two Gloves.
Bridgewater.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Who we think is going to play this Sunday. But I thought they were going to win. Once they got going a little bit in the second half, I felt the same way. Like, wasn't clean, wasn't perfect, but hey, it's the National Football League. It's not going to be clean and perfect all the time. Just get the win. They don't ask how. They ask how many.
Yeah.
All the cliches apply, and then the meltdowns.
I'm assuming that you are kind of cocky right now that the value of Cousins condos is through the roof. That you think that that investment you made a long time ago, the number is up. If, in other words, for some reason you needed to sell your condo, that you'd make a killing right now.
Yeah.
We're going to get to why I don't think it's quite that simple. And for once, I am not villain number one as it pertains to the Kirk Cousins legacy. We'll discuss that first. Grant, in your hand time.
Not today.
It's over?
It's over now, for now. Okay. Yep, the stretch is up. Well, there's no sheet in front of me, so I'm going with it.
All right.
Brian Donaldson can text me if he wants. If I made a mistake, we'll get it on the other side. But I have no sheet in front of me, so I think we're good.
If we're making a mistake, it's no different than the Minnesota Vikings making several. And so we always have...
AN.com.
Yeah, the holidays are here, and it's time for your new KFAN Christmas sweater. Get 25% off with our Black Friday sale. It's happening right now. Check out all the designs. Get your Black Friday deal, which includes State Fair t-shirts as well, in the Pro Shop at KFAN.com.
Jaws had several nicknames. Ron Jaworski at Youngstown State University. Nicknamed Rifle Ron, and then the Polish Rifle. So I don't know where folks are coming up with other nicknames on him. Those are the two big ones, including in addition to Jaws as well. Sir Francis... Or Fran the Man, I guess. Both of those have been used on a former weekly contributor to the program. Fran Tarkenton, remember him?
I do. Fridays at 5:15.
Where are we, America?
Do we go Jedi Knight on Dante? He called himself that. Can you give yourself a nickname?
No, we've talked about it. I'm not in favor of it. I know in some...
Presumptuous, you think?
A little bit, yeah. In some cases, I think it applies... Like, Garnett called himself the Kid early on.
He did.
And that stuck. But that was Kevin Garnett. Like, KG's different
and
rules.
Big Ticket came from Harlan?
I think so.
I think Harlan called him Big Ticket, I believe, correct?
Among others, yeah. Among other things.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, I thought he was the first one to use that one.
I don't remember it.
That held up pretty well.
Big Ticket was great.
I know you're actually thinking of buying more property. To add to your cousin's condo.
We had a volatile day yesterday.
And I'm going to... You did. I mean, he was... I tweeted it like it was stating the obvious, but for the second consecutive game, he was Jedi Knight. He was utterly comfortable in his own skin, seemed to anticipate everything that the Cowboys were and weren't doing, found every opening, found every advantage, and at one point in the game had a perfect quarterback rating.
Yeah.
No denying that he was great. So then, to my surprise, because something was nagging at me, despite that, despite what I tweeted, and I think I tweeted it before the end of the game. It was probably in the third quarter, I'm guessing, maybe even early in the fourth quarter, where I'm figuring we're going to go at least 35, and we might get to 42. But something started bugging me as I look back on the game. And I know it's when the defense implodes to the degree it did, it's hard to say Cousins was the problem. I get that. It's all a proportion.
But,
you saw the headline. I'm assuming you saw it. Gesling trying to cause trouble today. I can't find the damn thing. That's the other Gesling story. That's Chris Boyd. Mark Criggs. I can't find it. Bottom line is, the headline is...
Stats look better than the score. Is that the headline?
The end of the game.
Yeah.
What matters is what you do those last couple drives. And he pointed out very quickly what Pat Mahomes did at the end of the Chiefs-Raiders game, another game where Chiefs defense wasn't very good. Raiders were going up and down the field. And Mahomes could have said, hey, I've been brilliant up till now. I shouldn't have to score another touchdown. But guess what? He took him on another touchdown. Now, it's unfair to compare anybody to Mahomes. We get that. I switched over at the end of the Vikings game to watch the finish of Packers-Colts.
Yeah.
What's A-Rodge doing? Well, Packers find themselves down 3, and they have to start a drive from inside their 5.
And have a 3rd and long.
Knowing that they got to get at least 3 to keep the game, to send the game into OT. And what does A-Raj do? On that third and long, he completes an impossible pass over the middle for about 40.
Yeah, right to midfield,
impossible.
Basically.
Now, ultimately, they didn't finish the drive with a touchdown. They had to settle for three and paid for it. Packers get the ball to start overtime. They're driving again. Receiver fumbles. At that point, all the Colts need is a field goal because at that point, both teams have had one possession, and the Colts end up winning the game. But it's undeniable that if you want to be classified really good, not just statistically good or even perfect at one point in the game from a rating standpoint, you have to finish the job. Last two times, the Vikings had the ball. Your guy was 2 for 7 for 16 yards. Now, is that all on him? There was a drop.
Second
the last
down.
Drive, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There was, on the previous drive, there was pressure. I think he had an incomplete pass to Ham, in which I think the ball fell short in part because he was under heat. That was on the, talking about the previous drive. By the way, that's the drive, too, where they got one first down. They complete the first play of that drive, 5:54 to go. He completes a 12-yarder to Rudolph, does Cousins. So now we got first down at the Minnesota 27-yard line, and at that point, that's as far as we go. And it reminded me, quite frankly, a little bit of the Gopher game. Both teams, both offenses could say, had a right to say, we did enough. We did enough. Sorry. Nothing else we can do. We did enough. It's up to the defense to finish the job. But in both cases, the offense had a chance to ice it. The offense had a chance to sort of, you could say, take the pressure off the defense. And in it, the way these two teams are both wired right now and built right now, the offenses need to carry them. Gopher game, that was the first game where I felt like that's exactly what they were up to. They said, we're fine. We'll do it. The passing game was much better. Your quarterback was much better. Same thing. Your quarterback was great. It's like Cousins at times. Cousins was great for much of the time. But if the last two times you have the ball, and you could say, well, you didn't have much chance to do much else, we don't know. We don't know what was available. I do know that the passes he tried to complete to Thielen were very tough throws and very difficult circumstances. Might another better quarterback have found a way to move around enough to create some sort of advantage that would have a give you a chance for a more likely completion? We'll never know. But as Gesling laid out, from a ratings standpoint, Cousins is way down compared to the greats, talking about the last minute or two of a game throughout his career. And last drives, I mean, we had that mess, was it against Tennessee? Another game where Cousins could have said, and actually kind of did, our offense was great.
Yeah.
But you needed one more drive. Or you at least, well, actually you did need one more drive because at that point you're behind late in the game. But you had opportunities to ice or to in that case, just get a field goal. You don't even have to go far. I think we were starting in that game at the 40. And we did nothing there. So if I'm ranking, am I going to put Cousins at the top of the list? No. But I'm going to say the great quarterbacks don't care how unfair it is that I've already brought us from behind twice in the fourth quarter. That's it. I'm gonna cross my arms. It's up to you guys. I'm done. You can't expect me to do it again. The best quarterbacks say, if I got to do it again, I'll do it again. I have to find a way, I'll find a way. And again, what was the final score? 31-28?
31-28.
All you need is three.
We needed like 35, 40 yards probably.
Exact. Well, probably more than that.
45 maybe.
You don't need a touchdown there. All you need is three there. So is that all on him? Probably not. But I can't leave it out. Sorry, I can't leave it out. If you have a chance, like I said in the previous drive, you get three first downs. You don't even have to score, I think. If you get three or four first downs on the second drive, I should say on the second set of downs, because you get the Cousins pass to Rudolph for 12, Cook runs for no gain. Then an incomplete pass to Ham, which is the one I thought he was pressured on, and the ball just came up short. And then an incomplete pass to Thielen. That's where I think Thielen thought he should have gotten
interfered with. Yeah,
I didn't see it, quite frankly. But it was a tough play to make. And then you're back to what made it so impressive up until then is how easy he was making it look with good decisions and wide open receivers. Were the receivers maybe not as open? Possibly. Can you blame him for Jefferson dropping the ball over the middle the last time he got the ball? No, but if you and I think that the great quarterbacks haven't had drops and then still said, all right, fine, get back. I'm going to 319 up. I'll make another play. If you drop one, I still got three good plays in my bag of tricks. So I don't think you can separate it out totally. And I was actually delighted that Gesling, because as I said, Gesling's going to take the heat for this. Usually I'm the guy that's got to take the heat on cousin savagery from you, among others. And at least now I won't be public enemy number one relating to what Gesling, it's at startribune.com. I think it's probably going to be, might be in tomorrow's paper. I don't think it was in the paper today. This is sort of their second day deal. Kind of their think piece kind of a deal.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know. I had the printout, but I lost it.
Well, I'm looking at Andrew Kramer's sidebar about Cousins in general, and he does note, and we're going to put this in some of our pamphlets at Cousins Condo.
Yeah.
Kramer does note that 9 of Kirk's 20 passes this season have come in the fourth quarter. Now, some of that is because of garbage time with Kirk Cousins.
Correct.
But 2 times he delivered the lead yesterday in the second half late, and it was squandered both times.
Got to do it again. 70.
I was all set. We had a wonderful Thanksgiving special at Cousins Condo. I mean, it was set. It was set up.
The table was literally
set. We had everything
set, ready
to go. Yes. My marketing people were ready to hit send.
You were ready to extend his contract to a lifetime deal.
No, but it was going to be a nice holiday. It's been a tough 2020 at Cousins Condos.
Correct.
And we were ready to kind of not break even because you can't do that in 2020, but at least kind of get back closer. And then it all went up in smoke in the last drive and a half.
Cousins rate, passer rating in such situations, I'm assuming last 2 minutes, 73.1 ranks 20th of the 33 quarterbacks who've thrown at least 50 passes. He's actually just behind Rodgers, who comes in 19th at a mediocre 75.4. But as Gesling writes, Rodgers has built his narrative with 10 fourth quarter scores or game-winning drives in the final 4 minutes since 2013. Cousins has only done it 6 times to go with a pair of ties as well.
So how many times?
6, which I actually thought was more than I expected.
And Rodgers has done it 10?
10. You're saying Rodgers may not have merited his place?
Maybe not.
Place?
I mean, I know when you did it yesterday. I mean, it was unbelievable how he did it yesterday, but that's not that many over 7 years. I mean, that's
the amazing thing about the ESPN had a stat about Mahomes. That's the first time in a regular season game he'd ever brought the team back that late in the fourth quarter, believe it or not.
Well, probably he doesn't have to do it much.
And a lot of it is he's probably generally very much ahead. And again, no one is going to be compared favorably to Mahomes. I understand that, and to a certain degree, even to Rodgers. But I did think it was interesting, and I just don't think you can leave out the end of the game any more than you can. Now, in the case of the Gophers, I heard you, and I doubled down on it 9 to 10 that it was a different issue. They did not even give Morgan a chance to finish the job. They went anal, and they went, we're going to hand the ball off 8 straight times, which makes zero sense with this offense in that particular game. It's just absurd to me. Why is PJ Fleck afraid of winning? I don't understand it. Earlier in the year, I might have because the quarterback seemed pear-shaped. But so you could say in that case, the Tanner Morgan fans can say, well, our guy didn't even get a chance. I mean, it's not his fault. If he's just handing the ball off, that's the play. You can't blame him if we're not getting first downs. Cousins had opportunities, and whatever the reason, did not finish the thing. 2 contrasting emails. Your irrational hatred of Cousins goes far beyond typical sports radio clickbait. I love when people, because they disagree with the position, they assume the only reason I could be doing it, in this case, quoting the guy who covers the team, that has to be clickbait. Because what does that word denote? It denotes, it can be utterly dismissed because he can't possibly mean it. Just disagree if you don't like it. Right next to him, Cousins is average at best and will always be about that. Sometimes slightly better than average, sometimes slightly below average. The last drive counts. P.S., why do we call it a prevent defense? Never seems to prevent anything except, of course, it's the Vikings on offense. That's not very kind. Not very kind at all. We got Lieber next, is that right?
We do.
Let's do it. We'll get Lieber's reaction to yesterday's action. Andre Patterson, 4:30. Big knocker.
FAN. Tony Pollard, the single set. Dalton under center. Goes back to Pollard. He has room to the right side. He runs to the first down. Inside the 20, 15, 10. Touchdown, Tony Pollard. A 42-yard touchdown by Tony Pollard. The first rushing touchdown the Vikings have given up in more than a month. And Dallas reclaims the lead, 22-21.
Now, the breaking news sounder is not to announce that Chris Jones has been released as a Vikings defensive back option, but it is to confirm that the Vikings have announced that your guy, Adam Thielen, has been placed on the reserve / COVID-19 list. Here's what they say. This list was created for a player who either tests positive or who has been quarantined after having been in close contact with an infected person or persons. If a player falls into either of these categories, the club is required to immediately place said player on the reserve / COVID-19 list. Blah, 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 and there's some details on it as well. Adam Thielen, fresh off an outstanding performance on the COVID-19 list. Ben Lieber is brought to you by Douglas and Todd Small Batch Bourbon Whiskey. Let's get your reaction to that announcement before we discuss the play that you know all too well and that we heard the Paul Allen call on moments ago. Not helpful news by any stretch of the imagination.
No, not at all. You know, we saw C.J. Ham with this the few days before the game, and it was determined that he was negative, and he was taken off the list.
True.
And played the game on Sunday. So these things, just like they say, they're precautionary for the most part. Now, if he did test positive, well, then that's a whole other issue, and then we're going to be without Adam Thielen against the Carolina Panthers. But if it is a contact tracing issue, it sounds like he'll have a couple days of negative tests, and then he'll be back to the practice field, and hopefully that's what it is. You know, let's hope that he's actually not infected, and this is a precautionary thing, and he'll be out there on Sunday.
You made your living playing defense, so I'm curious to get your reaction to the play we just heard and the Jones. I don't know what you made. I think you can speak to motive better than we can. Whether it was a swing and a miss, whether it was I want no part of this, whether it is, well, I'm pretty sure somebody else is going to be there, so I can just kind of stand nearby. How egregious a moment is that, or was that, and is it the kind of moment that within a locker room is very difficult to recover from if you are a defensive player?
Yeah, I mean, it's easier for a corner because, you know, I think most guys, as you kind of move outside on the defense, the expectation of being a great tackler and somebody that's going to sacrifice your body, that expectation goes lower and lower.
True.
But the fact of the matter is, like, you're one of the 11. You've got to be willing to go out there and throw your hat around. And especially when you're the last guy at defense, you know, when the receiver's blocking the safety and then you become the free player, you have to at least make an attempt at the play. And that's where I think he's going to feel the most embarrassed about and most ashamed about as they watch film today is, you know, there wasn't even a swing and a miss. You know, he took three strikes just looking and, in a critical situation. And that's the worst feeling. That's the worst part. It'd be one thing if he understood the technique that the receiver was displaying and he recognized right away that he's not getting stalked and he's going after the safety, then immediately in that moment, because that's not something new. I mean, that's something that even high school kids are aware of, that, all right, once you see him sort of leave you, and go block somebody else, then you've got to fill that guy's spot. And he didn't recognize it fast enough, nor did he even attempt the tackle. Now, if he attempted the tackle and he missed,
yeah,
you can live with that.
Sure.
I mean, you can absolutely live with that. But to kind of stand there and just olay the guy, that's it's embarrassing. And, you know, I know this is a strong word, but that's what he's feeling like in the locker room and watching film. I'm sure he, you know, shrank down in his seat. He probably felt like he was about 3 inches tall, and that's just the reality of Mondays.
Let's stay with the defense. Last 3 weeks, the Vikings defense has allowed 22, 20, and 13 points. Obviously, we lose yesterday 31-28. So from your perspective, is it the defense played really badly, or the Cowboys, given the extra week, figured some stuff out, remembered that they do have some talent, including Zeke Elliott and some pretty damn good receivers as well, and they just sort of took it to a defense that still isn't all that good?
Well, I thought the Cowboys really had a nice game plan. You know, they showed some things early in the game to see how our reaction was going to be with our corners and our safeties, and then sort of took advantage of those in more critical situations. So I thought it was a smart game plan, and they played to Dalton's strengths. And I know it seems a lot easier said than done, but I think everybody knew that they weren't going to hold on the ball very long. It was going to be a lot of quick passing, and you just have to figure out which side of the field they're going to open up to and have their one and two reads and get the ball out. And it's easy to be like, well, just stay inside leverage because everything's going to be a quick slant or something on the inside. And then, you know, when the time comes on 4th and 9 and they hit Mari Cooper on the sidelines against Jeff Gladney late in the game on that final drive,
yeah,
I mean, that's when they changed things up. So it's, they did a healthy dose of lulling you to sleep. And then they do the exact opposite when they really needed to make a big play. And so I thought it was, you know, I thought it was smart. And you look back on it, and it really was a war of attrition. It was, we had the same similar makeup as far as the way we want to approach things on offense. We were going to run the football, and that was going to open up things in the passing game. You know, we are an offense that takes a little bit more deeper shots, as indicated from the game. But we were just going to try to wear each other out. And we see a lot of the dynamic runs, you know, in the second half. And that's kind of what happened with them. They pounded us, and we did a really good job of stopping all of their interior runs. And then they just kept going with it in the third and fourth quarter, and they finally sprung a couple big runs. So it was just a battle of attrition, and they won.
Ben Lieber is brought to you by Douglas and Todd Small Batch Bourbon Whiskey. Joins us weekly after Vikings games. How much confusion did we see among the defensive backs several times, really, on patterns? There was the long Amari play at the end of the first half that, you know, ultimately Smith made a nice recovery on because it saved a touchdown there, and they had to end up settling for 3 points because of their timeout situation. But we had that one, and that was a different kind of play than the crossing route in the end zone that ultimately was the game winner.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we got going on here? We have communication issues again within the secondary. We got two guys trying to guard the same guy. What did you see on those two plays?
Well, you know, the way I kind of look at the play with Harrison involved on the Amari Cooper play at the end of the first half, you know, to me, when I look back at the game, it looked like Harrison was trying too hard to make some plays. You know, I think it felt really good to be on the receiving end of some interceptions and being in the right place. But, you know, let's rewind from that Cooper play and go back a series. There was a 4th and 1 where they ran the exact same concept, except it was flipped as far as the receiver and tight end.
Mm-hmm.
The tight end was left open. Dalton tried to hit the quick out to the flat, and we guessed right. You know, both the corner and Harrison jumped the out route, and it was an incomplete pass, turnover on downs. Well, Kellen Moore and the coaches up in the booth saw that. They came back the next series, and when they needed a play, they ran the exact same concept, and they just flip-flopped the guys. And they put Cooper on the deep shot. They put the tight end in the flat. And what happened again? Well, Harrison jumps the guy in the flat, which is not his position, and they get Cooper down the sideline. So they took advantage of our aggressiveness. They obviously game plan for those situations when they saw them and said, okay, well, if they're going to jump this, they're going to be aggressive over here. Let's see if we can show them the same look and see if they do it again. And they won that battle. And you know, it's kind of unfortunate because you expect the young corners to make those mistakes, not our veteran safety.
What about the crossing route, the end zone that broke wide open?
Well, there's a whole lot going on in that play. You know, when they motioned over to create that three man surface over there, and any sort of three man bunch, especially with the back offset, you really got a four strong concept is a really kind of a tough thing to talk about. You know, when it's actually motioning to it, and the guys over there have to communicate. You know, they have to figure out who's on who really quickly and who's got the first guy to flat, who's got the guy at the point, who's going to take the first crosser, who's got the back to the backfield. You know, that fourth element with the back to the backfield is a big thing. And you could tell, there was a lot of confusion because it wasn't just the tight end that was open. If you looked right underneath the goalpost, there was another player that was wide open as well. So you left two guys open. And so if they cover the one guy going across the field on the shallow cross, well, they're going to throw it to the guy under the goalpost. So a whole big breakdown, not just on just the tight end.
You know, this is all very subjective as you're watching a game, whether you're near the field or you are watching it from the safety and comfort of a Barca. But I, like a lot, I heard PA say this. I mentioned Common felt the same way. I never felt the Vikings were going to lose that game. I never did. And this doesn't, I'm not going back to before the game. I'm just saying as it's playing out and as we're getting into the second half and as they're putting on a clinic offensively, the Vikings, I understand the Vikings defense looks shaky, but I'm going, no, not this shaky. This offense is going to keep the pressure on. They're not going to lose this game. They're going to win. Not overconfidence, just a vibe that I was getting. What was your vibe? Do you agree, or were you shakier on it as it's playing out in the second half?
No, I felt the same way. You know, obviously at halftime when we were down, going to the locker room, I was a little uneasy, but I was still pretty confident because I just kind of know how we're built, and I'm like, all right, I think that we're gonna get Dalvin going in the second half, and that's kind of been our MO, and we're just gonna wear them down, and we have the better receivers, we have the better quarterback. I just thought overall we were going to find a way to win the game. And it wasn't, and then we come out of the second half and I'm like, bam, touchdown.
Yeah.
Okay, this is it. Now I felt really good. And then, you know, I think we got them to punt and they scored and we got them to punt again. And, you know, I think their offense only hit the field four times in the second half. So, good job by our offense under the ball and the time of possession, all that stuff. So it just seemed like momentum was on our side, even though they would make a few plays here and there. I'm with you. I think a lot of people said that same thing, that the three-game win streak, I think, gave us the, you know, true confidence, and I think that allowed us to go in the game feeling pretty good about ourselves, not only from a player standpoint, but from a fan standpoint. And so it was a little shocking that we didn't walk away with that win.
Is it at all fair to bring up the fact that Kirk Cousins and the offense, the last two times it got the ball, moved it for, I think, one first down. That was it. Cousins was 2 for 7 for 16 yards. Is it absurd to talk about that as a legitimate source of criticism after a game in which, at one point, Cousins was so good that he had a perfect quarterback rating?
Sure. I think it's fair because everything is open for interpretation and criticism in the world that we live in. But I don't think that I don't think it's validated. You know, I think you look at his whole game, I thought he played fantastic. And, you know, there were a couple concepts that I saw on the last drive that you're talking about, not the final drive, but the one before,
right,
where there weren't any outlets. And I think part of that was because, well, our offensive line, they needed some max protection. Running backs had to stay in a little bit. Tight ends had to stay in a little bit. There might have been a check release or something, but it was late. It seemed like all the routes were deep down the field, and it's like, well, what do you expect Kirk to do? You know, do you expect Kirk to throw it into traffic and get the ball picked off? No. So, you know, he didn't have a lot of options in a couple pass plays. And, you know, I know that everybody's all enamored with what they saw with Patrick Mahomes last night, but I think it's very unfair to look at his skill set and say, oh, well, why can't we do that with Kirk? It's just not the same.
Rodgers did it too. He got the field goal, and they ended up losing. And now, fairness and savagery, on the last drive, Cousins was victimized by a drop, a rare drop by Jefferson. That wasn't, I don't know if that was going to be a huge play, but it was going to be a plus play. You have to factor that in. I get that. It sounds absurd, but I still think, even if it's unfair that an offense that it was as explosive as it was in the second half, given this defense and the realities of it, sometimes that's life. It's unfair. You got to go and get another score, or you got to go and at least keep the ball more. Now, maybe construction's part of it, because somebody emailed me that on the last drive, it didn't even look like there were many receivers out, and we're back to max protect for the same reason you laid out, because we're worried about our offensive line. So maybe they have to come up with something different there. In other words, if a certain pattern has helped them break the game open to the degree that they seem to in the second half, where they were doing so well offensively, maybe you have to stick with it and get creative again about moving Cousins out of the pocket a little bit, because we had a lot of that going, and give him some of the opportunities that he was taking advantage of earlier in the game.
Well, I'll steal a take that Pete Bursich said after the game, and I thought this was brilliant, and it was a great observation. You know, you look at all the really successful plays in the passing game, action.
Ben,
you there?
We lost you. Now you're back. Yeah, now start over.
It was a brilliant point.
I know it's too important.
We don't want to lose the brilliance.
So you're stealing Bursich's take. We got that much. What was the take?
Okay, I'm stealing Bursich's take, and you know, you get the 2-minute mode. And that's really the first time all game where you've had a series where it's nothing but straight drop back. You know, it was all boots. It was all play action. All the big explosive pass plays were off some sort of run action. And you were deceiving the defense in some sort of way. No, at no point in time in the course of the game did you have a series of 3, 4, 5 plays where a straight drop back pass, they could pin their ears back. They know that you're going to try to get the ball down the field. They know it's going to be a pass. There's no threat of run. And I thought that was a really good point, because that is how our offense is built.
True.
And I think we are limited by kind of what we have on the offensive line with Kirk's skill set, I think, as well, that we are not a straight drop back passing team. And you saw in those situations why that's an issue. And the other thing that I'll say I think there's a reality that we all have to live with. Kirk is not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Aaron Rodgers, and he's not Russell Wilson. So get it out of everybody's heads. Like, you're trying to make him somebody he's not. Kirk played a fantastic game yesterday. He made plays with his legs. He extended plays. He was doing everything that everybody ribbed him for early in the season, and he made every throw down the field on the money. He was throwing receivers open. He was throwing the ball where the guys were catching it in stride. I don't know what else people want from him. And if you want him to be a different player, you're asking for too much.
Well, I think, yeah, to your point, though, maybe some of it's structure, the way what they seem to fall back on the last couple times they had the ball. But it's not a fair game. And it isn't fair to compare him to Mahomes. It's obviously not fair to compare him to Rodgers. But any series of quarterbacks is going to be evaluated in part on what Gesling wrote about today. It's online today about those so-called clutch numbers the last 2 minutes. And so I just don't think you can separate it totally. Let me finish with this, because this is a stat that caught my attention, and maybe you know it already. It's one of those hidden, sneaky ones, but it might say a lot. For 2020 to this point, the Vikings have the second worst starting field position in the entire league on average, and their opponents have the best. That's a sneaky stat that it's not sexy, but that's a pretty significant stat that if you're a team that's already got some flaws, and maybe it's part of the reason you have the flaws, it kind of works against you having your best shot to succeed.
Yeah, that's a great thing. That's a great stat. I haven't heard that. And I think that's why, you know, that falls into the whole narrative of why everybody's so upset about some of these penalties, which I didn't think the referees, should be blamed for much in the game. But I think it contributes to this idea that our margin for error is so small.
Right.
You know, we have to play with good field position. Our special teams have to be on point. We have to get some of the calls. We have to play clean football. And so I do think that all sort of fits in together like that. And yeah, that's probably another reason why, you know, Marlon Maloof was getting MF on the sidelines, because I think, you know, they understand internally why field position is so important.
You're a great special teams mind. If you had to hazard an educated guess, how many yards do you think we have cumulatively for this entire season on punt returns? Total yards on punt returns for the Minnesota Vikings 2020. What are we, 10 games in now? What's our record? 4-6? Yeah, we're 10 games in.
Oh, total?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, 25?
You're close. 13.
Excuse me?
This, again, is Ben Gessling with some good nuggets today on this piece online. 13. And I understand a lot of teams, it's fair catch, fair catch, fair catch, all that. But that almost doesn't seem possible. 13 yards, and he's, the contrast he's using is, of course, that Lamb, you recall, in this game alone, has got almost double that. 20. He had a 20-yard return that helped set things up for them. We need to get our special teams back to a little better spot, don't we? Especially with the reduced margin for error that we have.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look what Cordarrelle Patterson does in the kick return game. I mean, you know, the defense. You need anything that you can do to help the defense out and make the opponent's offense one dimensional. Whether it's scoring on offense, scoring on special teams, obviously, you know, scoring on defense if you get that opportunity. But man, oh man, we all understand that the defense is the weak link to this team. And obviously special teams is way worse than that. But if special teams can come around and they can pick up the slack, then it's going to help out the defense tremendously. And then maybe we can see those guys pin their ears back and get after a quarterback.
Are we done? Is this season over?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, expanded playoffs, all that stuff. You know, you can be 9-7. Yes, you've got some tough games coming up at Tampa and at New Orleans, and you got to take care of the games before that. But you got some winnable games coming up, and you got to put some things together on the road. You've proven that you can play well on the road. We just got to stop making stupid, undisciplined mistakes on defense, especially. Keep doing what we're doing on offense, because it's working. And you know, hopefully, we can sneak in at 9-7.
9-7 would mean then you're going to have to beat either the Saints or Tampa, right? Saying that's impossible, but I'm saying now with the loss yesterday, that's sort of the position you put yourself in.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I've got confidence in the way that we play against Sean Payton, and you know, it always seems that we're playing very competitive games against Drew Brees. And so, and hopefully that comes to fruition again, and we play a tough opponent down there, and we come out with a victory, and should be nice if we got a victory in both places.
Last item, Andre Patterson joins us every week, and we're going to play back the interview he did with us earlier today at 4:30. And he said a really interesting thing, I thought. Now, again, he's a defensive guy. So maybe you can cut through this, either agree with him or say, well, that's what a defensive guy is going to say. He said flat out that, in his opinion, the reason a lot of the sack numbers and even pressure numbers are down in pro football, and he had a series of analytics to that effect, is that the league has either officially or unofficially decided that they don't want to call holding penalties. He believes there's more holding. He didn't just say what's happening, you know, we were victimized by it. He's saying there's more holding going on by offensive linemen than he can remember at any point in his coaching career. Is that just a defensive guy who's frustrated, or is that something you've picked up on?
I really have not picked up on that. I mean, he's obviously watching those guys way more intensely than I am. So I have no choice but to believe that there's probably a lot more leniency when it comes to offensive holding. And you know what? I think overall, I think people have appreciated the fact that there's less flags being thrown in some of these games. And I don't know the metrics on the duration of games and all that stuff, but, you know, and I still feel like we get a healthy dose of replays as far as challenges and things like that, taking second looks at different things. And I think that's good. If we're going to replace, you know, throwing flags on a would-be holding or just the regular flow of the game and the gameplay, I'd rather we take some of that away and pick up on turnovers and scoring plays and really truly crucial difference making plays and make sure we get those plays right. So even if the gameplay and the duration of the game is the same, I'm okay with taking extra time to make sure that we get, is a knee on the ground, is this the catch, and things of that nature, and swallowing the whistle on some of these holding calls. But I'll believe him with that, and I think that there might be something to that. But I also think that, you know, he's probably protecting himself a little bit and making sure that everybody knows that his guys are still working hard, and it's not as if they're not trying. They're getting held a little bit.
Thanks, Lieber. Any final thoughts on Douglas and Todd Small Batch Bourbon Whiskey with Thanksgiving just around the corner?
Well, it is a perfect pairing for turkey. I don't know if people knew that. You know, I know the sommeliers out there are telling everybody that, you know, reds go with steak and whites go with fish, but bourbon goes with turkey and stuffing. And, you know, you can even kind of pour some over your mashed potatoes.
Nice.
So I actually thought when you went in with the Andre Patterson question that you were going to mention that he loves Douglas and Todd. Because I'm going to go out on a limb and say he does.
I'm guessing, yeah, he probably felt like he needed it last night, too, a little bit. You know what I'm saying? After the way things went defensively for him, no doubt about that. We appreciate the time. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, my friend, and we'll chat next week.
Yeah, you as well, man.
Thanks, Ben. That's Ben Lieber, Nacho Lieber, we call him. Andre Patterson, bottom of the hour, big knocker Bill Maurice. At about 5:30, we got some more Vikings talking points to get to. We'll also come back and update you on the breaking Vikings news as it pertains to Adam Thielen Station.
With cold weather approaching, you can provide hope to young people experiencing homelessness in the North Metro. Donate to Hope for Youth. You'll be helping to fund a drop-in center for those young people to get basic needs, supplies, and connections to support. Help now by using the keyword HOPE in the search bar on KFAN.com.
Garji, we had yesterday a veritable cornucopia of strange, weird, almost unbelievable penalties committed by your favorite football team. It just so happens, Garji's put together a blend of several of them.
Cedric Wilson is returning punts along with CeeDee Lamb. Wilson back now. Fake punt! Yes! Flag on the play. Colquitt fires to the right and is caught by Chris Boyd at the Cowboys 34. A 32-yard connection on a fake punt. Colquitt throwing to Boyd. Flags all over the place.
Illegal shift. Offense. 5-yard penalty. Repeat fourth down.
Wow. Not a great punt by Colquitt. Flag on the play. Here comes CeeDee Lamb, far side to the 25-30. 35 goes the rookie with an unofficially an 18-yard return and a 41-yard punt by Britton Colquitt. Once again, another flag. This Vinovich staff, again, throws 11 flags a game, second fewest of all the crews in the NFL. We've had a million in the first half.
During the kick. Illegal block in the back. Receiving team number 29.
No, kicking team.
3-yard penalty at the end of the kick. Dallas ball, first down. Timeout.
Kicking team. Yeah.
Back to pass, whips it out right. Another guy wide open. It is caught at the 50-yard line, and a flag comes in. That's BC Johnson's first catch in at least a month. And BC, with a catch of 12 yards, flag on the play. Bill Vinovich, come on.
Personal foul. Face mask.
Them.
Offense number 81.
Oh, my God.
15-yard penalty. Repeat first down.
Are you kidding me with that, by the way?
That's unbelievable.
So,
Versage, by the way, for the next 30 seconds, just kept muttering to himself while PA was laying it out.
Block in the back, you usually associate, well, that's the receiving team, because they're trying to create an opening for their return man. But au contraire, with us, we, our kicking team guy did it. Same guy who was so aroused by the fact that the Cowboys defender lined up with him, peeled away, and he's all by himself, and he's wanting to make sure his punter knows it, but he won't stop moving.
Didn't get set.
And so he didn't get set. So that's two bad plays in a row there. And then what was the last one? BC Johnson face mask. We associate generally, it's not unprecedented for an offensive player to do it, but usually it's the defensive guy nailed for in the attempt to make a tackle, just reaching for something and ends up grabbing and sometimes jerking the helmet of the offensive player with the ball. In this case, our receiver did it, negating a nice 12-yard completion. Can't make it up.
We also had a defensive holding on a defensive lineman, I think Julial Johnson.
That's true, you're right.
And that those are more, I've seen those pop up more and more, and I guess the theory is he's trying to keep the lineman from going to block the linebacker. I think that's what Johnson and Vilma was explaining, where the lineman will grab the offensive lineman because he doesn't want to swallow up two guys, but that doesn't happen all that often either. We got one of those.
You know what we need to do? One of these days, if you can find him not hunting, because that's still what he does, I think, we got to get Bud on the phone and explain what the secret is of having great special teams. How did he fashion special teams that were almost mythic in how successful they were at doing everything? Blocking punts, field position, blocking kicks, etc. Because right now, it's undeniable for a team that is already pretty flawed, we get killed by the X factor in a lot of games, the special teams. I mentioned the field position stats that Gesling had come up with. I'm going to trust that they're legit, that they're accurate. So you put that into the equation that we're not that good anyway, and you say, well, if just reverse that. Let's say we had the best special teams in the league and the best field starting field position as opposed to the worst. I'm not saying we'd be undefeated.
Makes a difference,
like the Pittsburgh Steelers, but it might be worth a game or two because it's uncanny how bad we are right now. And it seemingly across the board, we have zero threats on kickoff returns. Zero. We have zero threats on punt returns. And I know there aren't many of those anyway, but there are the occasional, as we saw from the Cowboys yesterday, you heard it, 18 to 20 yard return on a punt that can flip field position. So we got nothing going there. We're not, I don't know where we are in terms of holding other teams and their returns, you know, punts and kickoffs in general. Maybe we're okay there, I'm not sure. But we get, you know, blocked punts, 2-1 game, for God's sake.
Yeah.
We just have an endless array, and it's so different from what the Vikings once were. That was part of their trademark. That was part of the Bud Grant mystique with special teams, that even to the point where the Vikings might get outplayed, but they have two or three goofy special teams plays and flip the game that way. So we'll work on that. Maybe that's something we can think about, because there's got to be...
It makes a difference.
There's got to be some method to it. We are a little bit behind because we went long with Lieber. Had fun in that conversation as always. Let's get a break in. Bottom of the hour, Andre Patterson and Bill Maurice, Mayo Clinic Big Knocker, will join us in the 5 o'clock hour. Brad Sean Bryan inbox, booth at KFAN.com for your reaction to the Viking set.
To the fan. Tethered off, we're gonna tether off the mother sucker.
Tethered off, the sucker. Tethered off, we're gonna tether. The holidays are here. It's time for your new KFAN Christmas sweater. You can get 25% off of their Black Friday sale. It's happening right now. Check out all the designs. Get your Black Friday deal in the pro shop at KFAN.com.
Reason going into the game, well, there probably are a couple, but the primary reason going into yesterday's debacle to at least have some nervousness that goes beyond what I think Vikings fans like to think is the team's identity was the sorry state of the NFC East standings. Human element should not be ever underestimated. Ordinarily, a team that's sitting at the Cowboys' record, what was it, 2-7?
They were 2-7, yes.
You'd say they're going to tell people they got pride and they're going to try hard and, you know, they want to win and all that stuff. But deep, deep, deep down, what do we got? What are we doing? Our quarterback's out for the season. The backup, you know, has had a moment or two, but we're just... It's just over. It's just not our year. Just not going to be our year. So I'll put up a, you know, I'll act it out as if we're going to work it hard and try to steal a game in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but come on. But then you look at the standings and you go, wait a minute. How absurd is this? If we somehow, coming out of the bye, identify some issues, figure some stuff out with that extra time that we had, we could win the division. It's not insane. And actually, it might be kind of cool to win the division at 7-9, just to hear everybody complain about it. And that, to me, was the number one reason to expect that Dallas would take this game seriously. The Cowboys would take this team seriously. As I understand it, they moved their good right guard to right tackle. Their two regular tackles are both out on injured reserve. Further evidence that we're not the only team that's dealt with injuries. You know, I know we like to think we are, but we're not. That's something we talked about a little bit on Sermons. I wasn't picking the Vikings to lose. I did think Dallas would cover. I thought it would be a closer game than that. But I don't think you can discount the fact that the other three teams in the division are so crappy or have such crappy records as saying, the coach can actually, with a straight face, sell the notion that got some stuff to play for. We win this game, who knows what happens? We got a little bit of a roll. No one else in the division seems interested. The Giants have been a little bit better, I guess, lately, but no one else seems to want to do anything. So let's take a shot at it. We still have some talent. Elliott, Zeke is still a good runner. I don't care what anybody says. They've got some receivers. Their defense wasn't supposed to be as bad as it looked. But guess what? Guess what? Their defense made a stop. Our defense didn't. In fact, their defense made, you could argue, two stops at the end of that ballgame. One before they got the go-ahead touchdown and one after the go-ahead touchdown as well. So I think that was part of the issue. I mean, I think that was part of the reason to be a little nervous, above and beyond the usual stuff pertaining to the fact this isn't a great team.
Zimmer even hinted at that this morning or this afternoon during his press conference, saying that he feels like some guys maybe weren't as locked in as they should have been, feeling their oats a little bit, is what he said.
Yes.
Specifically talking about the young guys. But you heard about the Mike McCarthy gimmick.
I don't know if I did.
.com Tom Pelissero has been reporting it today.
Oh.
That the night before the game.
God, he's wacky.
In Tim Brewster-like fashion, Mike McCarthy brought out a sledgehammer and a bunch of watermelons and started smashing the watermelons.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
Come on!
You're doubting .com Tom? He wouldn't make up a story like that.
I'm doubting the coach.
That's what he did. Apparently smashed watermelons like Gallagher to emphasize their objectives. Players roared, then responded with an inspired win in Minnesota.
You know that had nothing to do with the victory, right? You know that had that's a cute angle. I don't doubt that it's true, but I'm saying that's one of those. We'll never know. You know what? Chances are he did the same thing three other weeks this year, and they still lost. But we just don't know it
because
no one wants to bother to report it because it doesn't matter. Was that his own way of saying
fat cats get slaughtered? Yeah, exactly. He wanted to push a button. I didn't know McCarthy had that in him. It doesn't really seem like his style.
It's even more gimmick. That's even more gimmicky than fat cats get slaughtered.
Yes, it is.
Come on. It's just okay.
1-0 since he brought out the sledgehammer. That's all I know.
That's a great angle. Let's come back with your guy, Andre Patterson, Vikings defensive coordinator. A lot of interesting things to say about what ailed his defense in this game in particular, and a lot about his own reaction to Harrison Smith getting flagged yet again.
Time now for the Vikings Report on The Fan, presented by Miller Lite, official beer sponsor of the Minnesota Vikings, celebrating 60 seasons. Vikings defensive coordinator Andre Patterson joins Barrero next, after this from Miller The Fan.
Hey, you can join me, Guardsy, on our Facebook page weekly for Gopher Review Previews, presented by Affinity Plus Federal Credit Union. For more info, go to KFAN.com. Keyword events, and join us Wednesday.
Vikings defensive coordinator Andre Patterson is back with us in the wake of a 31-28 Vikings loss at the hands of the Dallas Cowboys. I don't have to tell you that the last 3 weeks your defense had played much better. I think he'd given up 22, 20, and 13 points in the last three. It looked to me, from my untrained eye, that the defense did take a significant step back yesterday. How did you evaluate it? What did you see?
Well, I think it, the last two drives of the fourth quarter, I think would be ones that we would love to have back. You know, we missed a tackle on the long touchdown run. It should have been a 5-yard gain. Should have been an easy tackle for the corner. You know, and then we misfitted the one run that Zeke had, you know, late in the game. You know, that another one that should have been a 2 or 3 yard game as far as the run game was concerned. You know, and then on the last drive of the game, we had our hands on two balls. Mm-hmm. You know, Eric had a chance to pick one, and then I think it was 2 or 3 plays before the touchdown. Our corner had his hands on a ball that hit him right in the chest. So, you know, we had two opportunities to pick the ball off to give us a chance to win the game at the end. And, you know, we didn't get that done. So, we knew going into the game that they were a dangerous team. You know, Zeke is, you know, one of the top backs in the league and three legitimate receivers. So, you know, and we didn't execute at the end the way we needed to.
Yeah, Zeke can still run. I think that was emphasized and made very, very clear. On the 42-yard score, which you mentioned, the Pollard run, give me part of what I sent. Obviously, there was great concern about what Chris Jones didn't do on that play. But you've also reminded me a few times that sometimes there are other things that happen on a play that might lead to a breakdown. Did Jalen Holmes do his job on that play in terms of setting the edge, something you and I have talked about before?
Yeah, he was outstanding. I mean, I think the thing that people don't realize is our ends don't play outside the tight end.
Mm.
See, so people whose ends play outside the tight end, their ends set the edge, the question that you asked me. You know, their ends are 9 techniques, so right. They set the edge. Our ends are what we call 6 techniques. They're head up. So they're playing the inside gap of the tight end, not the outside gap of the tight end. So Jalen did a nice job of knocking the tight end back and holding the C gap. That's what made the ball bounce outside. And so once the ball bounced outside, it's our safety's job to make the tackle. Well, the receiver cracked the safety. Well, now the unblocked player is the corner. So the corner is the one that has to make that tackle. So it played out exactly the way that you wanted it to, except for the corner didn't make the tackle. If he makes the tackle, it's a 3-yard gain, and it's second down.
I mean, give me a little more detail on then Jones, because it you know, again, it looked as if he didn't seem that interested in making the tackle. Did he whiff? I mean, did it? What did you observe? What did you see on that play?
I don't know. I haven't got a chance to visit with him yet. I mean, and you know, one view that I've seen watching, I've probably watched it 5 times today already. You know, at one time I thought, well, maybe he didn't see him until the last minute, and then all of a sudden he was on top of him. You know, I don't know. I don't know what. You know, what his response will be until I get a chance to visit with him. But he knows, you know, in the way, in our scheme, in the way that we do it, if the receiver cracks the corner, then he's the one that has to come up and support the run. So, you know, he was there, for some reason he didn't shoot his gun. And, you know, that's the reason why the long run took place.
Is that why he was taken out?
No, I mean, I don't think that was the reason why he was taken out of the game. You know, we were trying to play, since we got 2-7 back, we were trying to play those guys
right. And
rotate those guys a little bit too, so.
You know, let's talk a little bit more detail about the last drive. They had a 4th-and-6 completion to Cooper. I think Gladney was on the coverage. It didn't look like bad coverage to me. It looked like just it was a good play. It was a good offensive play. What did you observe on that play? Was that pretty good coverage? Did you need something else to happen there? Obviously, you know, that also can end the game if you guys can stop them right there.
Yeah, no, it was a good route, and it was a good throw. You know, he put the ball where only his guy could catch it. And, you know, when it came out of his hands, I was hoping it was going to be a little bit wide, which was what you were trying to hope that he does, is right. That, you know, you use the sideline as the 12th guy. You know, so you hope that he made the throw a little bit wide because of where he was covering it from inside out. You know, it's a tough throw for the quarterback, and, you know, he made a good throw, and the receiver made a good catch.
Andre Patterson is our guest, Vikings defensive coordinator. You mentioned then that they've got four, first and goal from the four, and then they go to Schultz, and that's the play, I think, where Boyd gets his hands on the ball.
Right.
Is that, you know, again, it's always hard to say, well, the DB's got to catch that ball. It's really easy to say it from afar. But was that one where you looked at it as like, man, yeah, you're in good position. You're right there for it. You've got to make that catch.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you say. I mean, that's the game's on the line. You know, you got to make that catch. And, you know, he put it right there in his hands, and it went off his chest. And you got to make that play to win the game. And that, you know, during that time of the game, those are the kind of plays you got to make to win a tough, close game like that. And we didn't come up with it. And so we gave him another bite at the apple. If he catches that right there, the game is over. And, you know, a good NFL quarterback, you give him a second shot at it, usually it bites you.
And what bit you was a crossing route with Schultz, obviously. Give us, you've kind of tutored us before on sometimes it can look like it's one player's responsibility, but he doesn't have that responsibility as the player goes across the field. Lay out what happened on that play and lay out what was supposed to happen defensively from your standpoint.
Well, we were in man coverage, so you know, that they motion a guy across, and the guy that has that guy in motion is supposed to stay with the motion. And the guy who had the tight end man-to-man is supposed to stay with the guy man-to-man on the tight end. So when they motion the guy across, the guy that ran across with him started to go. The guy that had the tight end pulled off to go take the guy in motion. So we just totally blew the coverage on that.
The as you say, the defense had, or as we had talked about, has improved a lot, and it does come down to the last late drives in a game in which there was a lot of scoring going back and forth. I don't think in the first half you guys got helped by Dallas had some really good field position as well that put you guys behind the count a little bit defensively as well. Do you agree?
Yeah, you know you had the turnovers that gave them a short field. And, you know, but we pride ourselves on that, too, of trying to hold them to field goals, you know, and we didn't do that there. But, you know, and I think that played a major part, you know, in the game. If we don't have those turnovers early and you make that team have to drive the football, I think the odds would have been in our favor if that didn't take place. But it did. And it's the defense's responsibility to not let those become touchdowns and you know, hold them to field goals.
What did you think of your pass rush yesterday?
Well, I think two things. You know, one, they did a smart job of getting the ball out of his hands. I mean, it was short passing game, and it was bootlegs or what we call RPOs, you know, fake the run and, you know, and throw the quick slant and get it out. So I think there was only like 3 reps the whole game that we were able to get our nickel front out there when we put our 4 best rushers out there. So, you know, you got to tip your hat to them. They did a great job of getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands fast and, you know, short passing game. I mean, you probably have a number of balls that went deep down the field past, you know, 10, 15 yards on one hand. So, you know, that was their answer to try to keep us from blitzing them, was, you know, to get the ball out of his hand quick, short passes. And, you know, so you got to tip your hat to them.
Harrison Smith gets another personal foul penalty. I know you guys have been frustrated by that. You and I have talked about it before. So when a pattern like that gets established, what is the recourse for a team? I assume it starts with Zim, but is there a procedure whereby you guys can attempt to, at the very least, register concern, send in tape, have conversations with people? Or what's the procedure, and how frustrating is that becoming for you guys defensively?
Yeah, well, all you can do is, you know, you turn the play in. You know, you have, you know, at the end of the games, you can turn in plays to the officials of calls that you think they should have made. And then they, sometimes by midweek, they get back to you on how they saw it, on whether it was a good call or a bad call or, you know, whatever. So that's all we're able to do. You know, I mean, we watched the play over and over again. He hit the guy with his shoulder. He didn't make contact with his head. You know, but you know how it is. It, when, know, I think officials are human beings too, obviously, and so you know, when they start to think that that's who you are as a player, it's easy for them to see that, yeah, and not question whether it was a legal hit. And I mean, the same thing happened to one of our receivers later in the game, and it wasn't a flag.
Mm.
You know, so you know, so I think that's part of it too. And you know, but it, like I said, it's a tough deal, because you know, you don't want Harrison to stop being aggressive and just let him catch the ball. And if you tell him to go low, then now they'd be screaming, "Hey, he's trying to take guys' knees out." You know, so I don't know what you're telling me to do.
Well, it's interesting because it looks to me like this year, I don't know if there was an edict about this or it's just happening organically, that there are fewer roughing the passer penalties being called. There's a little bit more license where they're not as tight. I thought they got too tight on that call last year, and maybe they readjusted a little bit. And it almost seems like they're going to have to take another look at that whole defenseless receiver issue. We all understand it's about safety. But there's, again, I think, maybe an overcompensation where they're going to have to take a look at this thing. I don't know what the answer is, but it looks to me as if there isn't a great deal of consistency on the call.
No, there's not. And I'm going to tell you, you know, Dan, you brought up the rough and the passer deal. I'm going to tell you, the sacks are way, way down this year, okay, across the league.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest reason why is because they're allowing the offensive line to hold. I mean, so, you know, there's less hits on the quarterback. There's less sacks happening across the league because, you know, they're keeping those flags in their pockets when it comes to holding.
What do you think that's all about?
So,
is that just the old, we want to score, we want to see everybody like scoring, and that leaves guys like you going, what are we supposed to do?
I don't know. I don't know. But all I know is that it is common across the league. You know, you look at the stats, you know, there's probably maybe three teams in the whole league that's numbers are sitting where they normally sit around this time of the season. You know, everybody else is way, way down. And when you watch the film, they're allowing the O-linemen to get their hands outside and grab underneath the shoulder pads and use your shoulder pads as leverage. Whereas before, it was an automatic penalty if the offensive lineman's hands went outside the shoulder frame, you know, and they're allowing it to happen. So, you know, that's the reason why the numbers are way down.
Last item for you. You've got Carolina this week. I know it's early in your process here. Teddy did not play a week ago. I don't know what the plans are for this week. P.J. Walker, I think, replaced him yesterday. Can you give me just sort of a general primer on what you know about the Carolina offense?
Well, I mean, I'm expecting Teddy to play, and we all know he's a great player, and he does a good job of getting the ball out of his hands. He knows where to go with the ball. He does have some escapability to him, you know. I would imagine, too, that we're going to see McCaffrey, and obviously he's one of the better running backs in the league, running it and catching it out of the backfield, tremendous speed, great vision. You know, defensively, you know, we got a team that has the ability to score points, and they have a quarterback that does a good job of reading coverages and pressures and getting the ball out of his hands. So we're going to have to play well to slow this offense down.
Thanks again for the time this week. We will chat after that one. Good luck against Carolina. Thanks, Coach.
No problem.
Andre Patterson helping us out, back after a short
A Fan. Just in case you missed it, it's the top five sports talkers of the day. Now, it's time for Dan Barrero's Top 5 at 5, driven by Borton Volvo.
Bill Maurice in the 5 o'clock hour of today's broadcast. Top 5 at 5 now.
We know about the Vikings' loss yesterday to the Dallas Cowboys, 31-28.
Hold on 1 second.
Uh-oh. I'm
watching Brady walk in.
Look at him.
How manly he is. Isn't he something?
Got the flannel shirt going, it looked like.
Yeah.
Nice print and everything.
A really nice look, don't you think?
There's Aaron Donald ready to try to
beat the crap out of him.
Tear that flannel shirt right off of him.
That's
Jared Goff. Looks like he's going to second hour.
Nothing like this shot of the players
the
coming
walk-in.
In. Right?
You is know there? Who does the best spoof on it is our guy Munichy at the Wolves.
Really?
Whenever they have a game day,
he
has
yes.
somebody take pictures of him.
Well,
yeah. Fan relations, yeah. Maven, been with the Wolves forever.
Yeah.
He does the walk down the hallway. I don't know who the poor guy is that has to take the picture of him, but he does it. It's good. Game day fits. It's beautiful.
Looks like they just messed with Steve Young's ears. The cannons they got in that ship at Tampa Bay, just went off twice, and he's in the middle of it. It seemed to affect him. Just it might be a bit, but he seemed a bit bitter.
About 15 feet below Steve Young on the concourse level is where I began 2020 this year.
Think about that.
The Outback Bowl.
When the world was our oyster. Yeah.
15,000 Gopher fans all right next to each other with no masks, no social distancing on New Year's Eve. I was with the Kesslers briefly till they ditched me.
Yeah.
Believe me. I mean, we weren't thinking about COVID-19 then.
It wasn't even an inspiration.
No, that's where I began 2020, right there, that day.
You were saying before I interrupted you?
We know that the Vikings lost 31-28. Yeah. They've got Teddy Bridgewater and perhaps
maybe
Christian McCaffrey.
Maybe not.
This week as well, the Carolina Panthers. Will they have Adam Thielen?
Who is more manly? Brady, who I'm seeing again come onto the field, or Rubio? Who is more manly?
Rubio.
Who's a more attractive man? Rubio?
Oh, man.
Or Brady? BoothTheCampFan.com, Bradshaw and Brian inbox.
Well, hold on.
Men and women can weigh in on it. I'm kind of curious to hear what the women have to say, but I'll listen to anybody.
Rubio with the ponytail? They both have...
Does Rubio still have the beard?
I don't know. I think so, yeah.
Do you think it would be too much to ask our Tuesday guest, John Athletic...
Who just wrote about Ricky.
To hitch us up with Rubio. You'd think he'd put... He constantly wants us to put in a good word for him with various people.
Yeah, I've done that a lot.
And yet, do you think he ever puts in a good word for us on Rubio? And by the way, I've been locked out of my subscription. I can't get back in. I emailed customer service. They've ignored me.
Oh, no.
So I have no idea what... It's a monthly deal. Credit card's fine. Or if it's not, they're not explaining it. All of a sudden, I can't get in... to my Athletic account.
You know,
so I didn't read the Rubio story. I haven't read the last several Johnny Athletic stories. Sorry. I mean, I know what else I can do. I'm paying for it.
You know what I miss? One of the sneaky things I miss about COVID-19?
What's that?
I don't spend as much time around our desk area as I used to. I miss, in a weird way, like the 215 customer service calls that you have to make sometimes.
Yeah. Well,
does
I'm
that make
saying.
Me sick? Where no. You've got, like, you're on the phone with the Athletic and it's not going well. And you're not happy about it. They're not happy about it. I miss those from time to time.
You missed one over the weekend, by the way.
I know they're still happening.
That was in person. It wasn't on the phone.
Oh, no.
It's bizarre. So we'll save it for another day.
All right, let's talk about Adam Thielen. We don't need to look backward anymore. It's all about moving forward
now.
Are
Bachman's a big advertiser for us?
Not here.
Okay.
Not with our show.
All right, go ahead.
La Veranda?
No, Bachman's.
You should go with La Veranda.
Yeah, that's another.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's floral related.
So moving forward, Adam Thielen became the sixth Vikings player in the past month to be isolated on the team's reserve COVID-19 list. The team announced that today. We'll give the usual disclaimer and reminder that Thielen either tested positive or was in close contact with an infected individual.
We don't know which.
We don't know which yet.
Any sources, anybody working to get that scoop?
Haven't seen it yet. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened. Okay. Thielen can still be cleared to return for Sunday's game against Carolina.
PA knows.
He's got a minimum 5-day quarantine for high-risk close contacts and asymptomatic cases, and at least 10 days for a symptomatic case.
So 5 days for the former and 10 for the latter?
Yes, they can return even sooner if they're not positive nor deemed a high-risk close contact as long as they test negative.
So it's too early, clearly, to rule him out.
For sure.
For Sunday's game at home against Carolina.
And I would bet we don't hear anything until Wednesday at the earliest because tomorrow is obviously the off day.
Zim was expansive today, by the way. I heard at 2 o'clock.
I loved his... Zim, do you have a problem with the effort there, Chris Jones? Yeah, I did. Basically, paraphrasing. I think I shorted him one word, but I think he said, yeah, I did have a problem with it. Yeah, he didn't...
He bit off the answers this week.
It was one of those weeks, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes sense. Anything else in the NFL that you want to recap from yesterday? We talked about the Packers losing in overtime, and apparently now their receiver's getting death threats, so he's got to post about the death threats, and everybody's got to make a deal about the death threats. And
we'll talk about that before Maurice. I have that slated for more detail between 5:20 and 5:30, because it's definitely worth getting into. Other things about the day in the National Football League? Not a lot, really. I mean, it was a very entertaining Raiders-Chiefs game.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything you could hope for. We're back to maybe people are tired of the discussion. There are long stretches of games now in which it almost feels like it's news when a quarterback has an incomplete pass. And I don't know that I love it. I don't know that when it becomes so automatic that teams are, you know, well, this is maybe as big as bigger problem in college than pros, but they're routinely, you know, each team has 500 yards total offense or close to it. I don't know. Is that good? I guess that's what the kids want. But for me, if it is that routine, it's starting to lose its impact on me a little bit. It's become way too easy to score points. And I don't know what the answer is, but I love a good defensive effort and a good defensive performance. That's all I'll say. And I don't know how many great defenses there are out there, but there's some better than others, at least.
Yeah, gone are the days of, you know, 14-10.
Yeah, and a steady dive, that can get boring, too. I don't know. It just feels as if, you know, it's the old whoever's got the ball last kind of a thing, and that's reached a point where you go, are we headed for a day where 61-58, almost an arena league sort of feel, is what we're looking for in the National Football League? I hope not. I'd get a little bit bored by that. Who has the best defense in football? Pittsburgh's got a good defense.
They do. They're probably the most balanced, I would say.
Yeah, they probably are the most balanced.
I would say that they have, and that's why they're, you know, winning like they're winning. 27-3 yesterday, I think they won over Jacksonville.
Who's the Tennessee Titans runner? Is it Henry?
Derrick Henry.
I know he, too, is a fossil in that he's more of a throwback kind of a runner. But man, I like watching him run. Look, Dalvin's absurd, and Dalvin, again, it's completely different running styles, obviously. The quick feet of Dalvin Cook, to me, is what makes him almost, it seems like he's almost impossible to tackle a lot of the time. He does take some hard hits. He delivers some, but he takes some hard hits as he did yesterday. But Henry is just the sheer power and size of the guy. He's huge. What does he go? 6'3", about 290?
Let me find out for you.
Double check that for me. Monday night game on the Fan tonight?
Should be.
It's a nice little matchup, is it not? Tampa Bay. And who are we playing? They're playing the Rams. It's, yes. Rams, Tampa Bay. That's a nice matchup.
Derrick Henry is 6'3", 238.
I think he's closer to 250.
You think so?
Oh, he's a train.
In his pads?
I mean, that's a guy I wouldn't blame. Who's the defensive back we had who whiffed?
Chris Jones.
I wouldn't blame Chris Jones for wanting to run away from him. In all seriousness, or any defensive back, frankly. He's just, man.
Speaking of Johnny Athletic.
They came back on the Ravens.
I know,
it was
a great game.
On the Ravens, a hell of a game.
It was a good game. We watched a fair amount of that one.
You didn't even give Thielen proper credit.
What do you mean?
Well, you talked about the COVID stuff or the list he's on.
But not his ridiculous game?
Not only his ridiculous game, he's now matched, is it Randy Moss? The only guy, he's got, how many games have we played, 10?
Yeah.
10 touchdowns, 10 games to start a season with that many touchdowns? I think Moss is the only one, correct?
And Justin Jefferson has more, is averaging more yards as a rookie than Randy Moss, which is hard to believe.
Yeah.
When you think about Randy's rookie year. I know it was a different time and everything, but it's crazy when you start making those comparisons.
Well, I'll be honest with you. This may be, I'm not trying to buck for PST. Jefferson, I think, has shown a greater versatility in the patterns he runs capably early than Moss did.
That's fair.
Moss was obviously more spectacular and more absurd in taking over a game with some plays over the top. But the impressive thing to me about Jefferson is it looks to me like he can run any pattern.
Yeah.
He can get stuff short. Well, notwithstanding the drop late, which did hurt. He can get stuff medium. He can adjust anywhere, and he still, I think, obviously is able to go over the top, too. But he looks like he can handle any pattern.
And he's interested in making the more physical catches, too.
Yes, that's true.
That wasn't necessarily Moss's forte.
No, definitely not.
He would go up and out-jump guys. But like the one that he made on the sideline where he just caught it and the DB was all over him and he just had to hold it out.
Just held it out away from him.
That was incredible.
Yeah, that was a nice play.
Minnesota Timberwolves.
I was worried that was going to be a flag for taunting. it was going to be a taunting penalty.
We could have added it to our montage.
That's true.
The Wolves made a move, trading Amari Spellman and Jacob Evans for a future second-round pick to New York for forward Ed Davis.
Yeah.
And everybody loves it. Everybody loves the Ed Davis
move. The Interpol guys love it.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Davis, I believe, is 30 or 31 years old. But what
he's been in the league a while.
I'm going to put it this way. I'm not ready to say that everything has now changed with Ed Davis. I do understand that what Davis, in theory, represents is something we've talked about on this show for about 3 years that they have to add. Now, whether he's good enough, I'm not ready to say he does it all at such a high level that print the playoff tickets, but he does at least do the dirty work. We're talking about can protect the rim, is good defensively on the pick and roll, and when he's played, has had good numbers. Now, I think he got lost in Utah behind Gobert.
He didn't play a lot.
And he did not play a lot. So you got to factor that into the equation. They have an opening, no doubt, for somebody who, in theory, does the sorts of little things that this team absolutely needs defensively. And it's to that extent, it's worth a shot.
Quickly, a quick Gopher sports update. Gopher men's hockey swept Penn State this weekend. They're back in action tonight against Ohio State, 7:30, a game you can hear on Twin Cities News Talk AM 1130 in the iHeartRadio app. Tonight and tomorrow night against Ohio State. Women's hockey split with Ohio State over the weekend. They're back in action this weekend against Minnesota Duluth. Women's basketball announced their schedule today. They start December 2nd against Eastern Illinois. And Gopher men's basketball starts Wednesday night, 6 o'clock against Wisconsin Green Bay.
No, they don't.
I bring all of that up because the most recent bracketology is out, Dan.
Oh, come on. Lenardi?
Of course. Who else? Are your Minnesota Golden Gophers in the most recent bracketology for the NCAA tournament, which, by the way, will all be in Indiana this year, we think. Will the Golden Gophers and Richard Pitino, according to Joe Lenardi, be in the NCAA tournament as it stands now, 2 days before the season starts?
No.
The next question. This is high-level competitive stuff here.
Looks like they're one of the last four in. Lenardi has them.
How many Big Ten teams does he have in? Does he have 11 or 12?
He has 10.
Okay. Well, it's not 11 or 12 like you and Pitino were saying.
Not yet. The season hasn't started. We haven't even seen these guys yet.
Is the season really going to start?
It's going to start. I don't know how long they're going to go. Yeah. And they're bringing.
Are they doing daily testing?
Yes, in the Big Ten. And then the way it's working for like non-conference games, I talked to Coyle about this. They get tested, I think, before they leave, and then the non-conference teams have to get tested here as well. So we're kind of bringing them in. But they're an 11 seed taking on Patino's alma mater. What a matchup, Providence College.
Oh, that's a big one.
In a play-in game.
In a play-in game that doesn't exist. That's the beauty of it.
Not yet. It might.
But it can't be refuted.
And it might be at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis.
Along with everybody else, where
it's all going to happen. So anyway, I guess they would be the 10th team because they're an 11 seed. But if the season ended today and it hasn't even started, the Gophers would be back in the big dance.
God, what a racket.
I love bracketology. It's the best. It's absolutely the best.
It's the worst, but you've made it into the best because you can't help yourself.
I can't, and I know you don't like it.
All right. I don't really hate it as much as I pretend. Bottom of the hour, Bill Maurice, Mayo Clinic, Big Knocker. Lots of breaking news to get to. Some interesting comments from the governor about a new app. And then we got some other Mayo Clinic stuff that we need to address with him as well. Let's dive deep or deeper than we already have into the death threat story that's getting all kinds of national, perhaps even international attention as it pertains to the Packers receiver. What's his name? Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
You got
it. Is that correct?
Yes.
We'll discuss that, and then that'll prepare us for Big Knocker. So far, it's unanimous. It's Brady in a landslide.
Better
looking. The more manly man, the more attractive man.
Interesting.
Brady in a landslide. Think of Ain't Gal among those checking in. Brady, and it's not even close. Katie, Brady, keep up the great work, guys. Always entertaining us. She's got a fancy job. COVID-19 healthcare response team. Wonder if she'll be listening to the Big Knocker when he joins us at the bottom of the hour. I certainly hope so. Thank you for the kind words. Yeah, I can't find a single Rubio vote so far. What's wrong with Rubio?
Nothing. He's stunning.
Stunning's a good word.
He is. He's breathtaking.
Now, is he going with the man bun, going with the pony, and does he still have the beard?
I haven't seen him since the bubble. which was how many months ago?
Did he have, what was he going with the bun or the ponytail and bubble?
I think just the ponytail. I don't think it was a full bun.
All right.
But I don't remember. I don't recall.
We'll find out soon enough. I can't wait to have him on.
Johnny Athletic will have that in his next profile. Don't you think?
That'll be the oral history. Okay, so death threats.
Yes, because he fumbled.
The Packers receiver, what's his name again?
Marquez Valdes-Scandling.
That's well done.
MVS.
Well put. You know, I know that a story like that has to be covered. I get that. But, and correct me if I'm wrong, Booth Akivian, Bradshaw, Brian Inbox. Are law enforcement folks investigating seriously any death threats to the receiver who fumbled in overtime, leading to the Packers' setback? I bring it up not to minimize the insanity of it and the absurdity of it, but we're in this world now where literally all it takes is the anonymity of, I'm going to kill that guy. You know what? I don't even know what some of the comments were. I'm sure they were ridiculous. But the reality is every day there are people in the public eye who are receiving similar things. It says something about the culture, I guess, that folks are moved to go to that level. But are they real? I mean, it's almost when you state the obvious of, that's really sad. You know, all he did, it's just a game.
We need perspective.
Do you understand that that would really be a dumb thing to threaten somebody's death over? I mean, he just fumbled the ball. Yes, we all know that. But we also know that in 2020, a lot of people just decide, I don't care, I'm going to do it because I'm going to get a reaction. Now, if we have information that there's actually someone who is plotting this death, or any of the others that we've all gotten them, by the way, from time to time. We've all had, you'd be shocked about what people have hoped upon some of us over the years. You'd be amazed by it. I generally think we don't make that big a production of it. Not because it's not obnoxious, but yeah, we alert the media that in 2020 we have people who, like I said, 99% of the time have no intent of actually doing something. They just get aroused by offering up that kind of material, and they get more aroused when we turn it into this lecture of stating the obvious that just seems like it's a bit of an overreaction. That's sad, isn't it? Well, yeah, all this crap is sad. We already know that. So I don't know what we do with it. But I do know that I really believe part of the reason the itch is scratched is it's a headline that people can't resist. Death threats over, does this seem incongruous? A death threat over a fumble in a football game? I mean, we've had coaches hung in effigy, for God's sake. Cal Stahl was hung in effigy. Former Golden Gopher coach going back to the 60s.
Here at the U.
At the U, mid-60s. Pretty damn good coach, actually, back when they played legitimate schedules from start to finish. None of it, I'm not endorsing any of it. I guess I don't need the lecture about stating the obvious, and I don't think most people do either. We're so far past that point, we all understand that the ability for people to go out of their minds. Who was it the other day? I saw this via Twitter. Trending Woody Allen. And the rumor was that Woody Allen was dead. Turned out to be false, as far as I know. Anybody else see that and spend a little bit of time on the comments on that thread? Too bad. Can't wait to celebrate his death. I wish it was true. Now, you can think whatever you want about Woody Allen's conduct and his history and the very serious allegations against him, but it's become a game. I hate to say it, but it's just become a bleeping game, and we, to a certain extent, enable it by the level of coverage that we bring to it. When in 2020, it would almost be news if there weren't those sorts of over-the-top tweets. That would be the news. This has become, these kinds of tweets and threats have become kind of a dog bites man story. It's not surprising. It's not interesting. Now, if you got people capable of actually trying to act upon it, that's a whole different level that we're talking about here. But for most people, it's just sadly that I can do it. No one's going to stop me, and I'm going to get the reaction out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to add?
No, that was my reaction to it as well when it happened. It's sick. It's stupid. Yeah, it's embarrassing. And I know that
we don't need the lecture about it's unhealthy. We all know it's unhealthy. There's not a person out there who doesn't know it's unhealthy. Even the people doing it, they know it's unhealthy, but they're going to do it because they're looking to get, in many cases, a rise. In some cases, they're that warped. They're that screwed up. I don't even doubt that part of it. But you're not impressing anybody when you say, that really seems a bit much. I'm glad I have it in perspective. We're happy for you. Who doesn't know that's a little absurd? I mean, any of this stuff is absurd to that extent. Here's a vote for Rubio.
We found him.
It is easily Rubio. This is from Chris with the beard and ponytail / bun. I don't know if Chris is a man or a woman. Doesn't matter. It's interesting. Chris. So that's one. That's the only. Wait a minute. Hold on. Another vote.
Are there magic votes coming for Rubio now?
Tubby from Northeast. Rubio is far more exotic.
He's got some mystery to him.
There's no question. Yeah. He's got that going
for
him.
He's got some mystery to him. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, he's a little more, cosmopolitan. He feels to me like he might be. Now, of course, Brady would hate the idea that Rubio's more sophisticated because Brady lives in a very sophisticated world.
He does.
Who he's married to
he
and
does.
That world
Giselle.
In which they live.
Mm-hmm.
My money's on Rubio right now, I got to say.
My support is behind Rubio.
I'm leaning that way for sure. I can't wait to have him on, maybe with John Athletic. Maybe that's the only way we can have him on. That's fine.
Probably.
That's the way
we can
do it.
Yeah, we do that before.
You know, we can all compete to find out who can work harder to get a compliment out of Rubio or to go Chris Farley on Ricky Rubio, right? I don't even know who wins that, to be honest with you.
The listener.
It might be John.
The audience.
It might be Johnny Athletic. I'm late for Mayo Clinic Big Knocker Bill Maurice. There's a lot of newsy stuff to get to, COVID-19 related.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice.
William Maurice is back with us, Mayo Clinic, Big Knocker, a lot of things to discuss. We'll get back to, we'll finish the show with some more Vikings commentary and analysis as only we can, of course, deliver between 3 and 6:30 this evening. Welcome back to the program. How did you handle Indiana and its trip to Columbus, Ohio? Were you delighted with the entertainment value and the fact that Indiana did indeed make it interesting? Or do you not believe in moral victories and are you disappointed and hurt and scornful?
Well, I'm just naturally scornful. Honestly, I handled it a lot better than I did the Vikings game. I'll tell you that much. I think ultimately, you had to feel like the program was validated because they got way behind.
Yeah.
They made mistakes, and yet they managed to come back. I mean, Justin Fields, 3 interceptions his whole collegiate career, 3 in that game. So the flip side is, I think the turning point was right at the end of the first half there where they had that turnover on, the 5-yard line, and then Ohio State came back and scored. But so, it's a little bittersweet because it was actually a winnable game for them. The flip side is they definitely looked legit. So,
it was fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, actually, for sure. All right. Where do we was? So Vikings, though, you took that one hard, it sounds like.
Well, I'm just going to say that I am a pathologist, not a psychiatrist, so I really can't help anyone with the Vikings pathology right now.
Yeah. It is. It was a... Garge and I were talking about this earlier, that the odd thing for me was that, and this is why I think it's such a wounding loss, once the game began, even when they fell behind in the second quarter, with the way they came out in the third, I had no question that the Vikings were going to win that game. I was utterly convinced, and I've watched enough Vikings games to know you can't count on anything ever. But I really felt in this one, they're going to win. I it ain't going to happen. This is, they're fine. And that to me is why it should aggravate the Vikings players even more.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know we have bigger things to talk about, but the thing that's so aggravating us is that it was so eerily similar to the Titans loss.
Yeah, true.
The Vikings couldn't, where the defense couldn't hold up, and then they came out. You watch Mahomes come out with the same amount of time in the same situation and go down and score a touchdown easily, and then watch the Vikings not even get a first down. It's just, there's just some serious flaws on that team. I think they're sort of like the Wild were a year ago. They're destined for high level mediocrity.
Last two drives, the Vikings offense did nothing, despite the fact that they'd been state of the art through much of the second half. Okay. Let's get to the headlines that the governor made. Minnesota having launched what is classified as a COVID-19 tracking app via mobile devices. What do you know about this thing? How would you explain it to the average Rube so they can understand it? And is it, in your mind, a useful tool, an okay tool, or one that's not really that you expect to be that effective? What is it and what do you make of it?
Well, what I understand of it is actually something that's been worked on by my colleague, one of my colleagues at Mayo Clinic, Dr. John Halamka, has been leading some national efforts on COVID response, and his background in particular is in data and informatics. And so I know through him that this is something that's been worked on really since the opening days of the pandemic, and that is, you know, cell phone technology that can be used with a low energy Bluetooth signal to track, you know, to identify people who have had close contact for greater than 15 minutes with someone with COVID and notify them that they've had a high risk exposure. So the technology has been around for a while. I think there's been some debate as to how to use it or whether or not to use it, because it is, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it societally, but it just represents another, you know, the whole concept of being, you know, monitored and watched. I think it can certainly be an effective tool. I mean, we know from Asia that contact tracing and isolation can really be helpful in mitigating the spread of this and any virus. The flip side is people are still going to have to act on it. I mean, that, yeah, you know, they'll have to get tested, and the effectiveness ultimately will lie in what the people who receive the information do with it.
The governor had mentioned today that part of the reason that the state had hesitated was the concern about, you know, privacy issues. But it sounds like they've basically said that the numbers are such that they feel like at this point they've got to pull out pretty much all the stops. Even though allegedly there are some safeguards that are built into this thing, users identified only by random and rotating ID numbers, and et cetera, that you're fairly well protected. Some people will be convinced. Others will say, well, that's what they always say, but it will still make me nervous. So my guess is some people will welcome it. Other people will be very skeptical of it.
Yeah, I think that's to be expected.
Right.
And it's going to be similar to when the vaccines are available. There will be some that will be lining up to get it, and others that will be on the fence, and others that will be dead set against getting it, feeling that for whatever reason, you know, it risks their health or whatever else, that they just don't want to get it. So I think that's going to be why I think giving people as much information as we can so they can make informed choices becomes really important.
Looking at a headline that was in the Star Tribune today as well, for those few of us who still get the broadsheet newspaper, Mayo launches therapy to prevent COVID-19 hospitalizations. The clinic is the first in Minnesota to administer the antibody treatment. Now, we've talked a lot about Mayo-inspired treatments and approaches and so forth. Where does this fit in to what we've discussed before?
So I think first is really one important thing for people to understand is what we're talking about with this therapy. So the therapy itself is an antibody to the COVID virus, right, to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, to the spike protein, which is the protein that allows the virus to attach to your cells. when a person gets infected, about anywhere from a week to 10 days after their infection, they will make their own antibodies if they're healthy, and they'll appear in the blood. That's the basis of the blood test. And typically, if that's when a person will also start to feel better, is when those virus, because those antibodies help your body to clear the virus. What we're talking about here is actually giving those antibodies. It's critical that they're most effective if you give them to an individual before they made their own antibodies. So if you give it to someone, you know, 10 days after they've been infected or 2 weeks after they've been symptomatic, it's less likely to be of benefit because they already have their own antibodies. So that's what this therapy is, and that's why there's the emphasis on giving it early. What we're going to be doing at Mayo is actually, because it's an IV treatment, a lot of times patients will be put in the hospital just for the purposes of getting IV therapy. But we're going to set up, we have established an outpatient IV center so that, you know, we can give the person the treatment without them being in the hospital. So that's the combination that we're going after. Now, the challenge is that this drug, it is a drug, is manufactured, and like everything else, there's not a lot of it related to COVID when it's new. There's just not a lot of it. And actually, that's why I tweeted right before I got on. We continue to work with convalescent plasma because convalescent plasma is essentially the same thing, but rather than manufacturing the antibodies as a drug, you take those antibodies out of someone's blood and you give them to someone else that doesn't have them yet. And we're doing more studies. If you recall, we announced in August the antibody trial, the convalescent plasma therapy got EUA.
Yep.
There was some controversy about how effective it was. During that program, we had mostly given that to patients who were really sick and or in the hospital, so had already had the virus for some time. But now we're finally getting the randomized controlled trials in just so that the convalescent plasma also works in the same way. So that if you give it early and you can prove that there's a lot of effective antibodies in what you give, it also is helpful in that early period. So that's another one which will probably make something of a comeback here, at least until we can get more of the monoclonal antibodies that are drugs made. But they're essentially the same thing. One is manufactured in a pharmaceutical laboratory. The other one is donated from someone's blood.
All right. Is it fair to say that in the latter case, though, you were talking about the supply on the former, and in this case, you practically speaking, can administer more people can benefit from this more quickly? Is that fair to say?
What's that with providing it in this way in the outpatient?
The convalescent plasma approach rather than the manufactured drug.
Yeah, exactly. It just, there's more of that. We have quite a bit. At Mayo, we have quite a store. So I think that'll be I think we are going to be working on doing it, you know, establishing, doing a study to make sure it's safe, like with everything else in this setting. But the early papers from other institutions show that that will work. And if we can prove that quickly, it'll just be another tool because God knows we need as many as we can get.
The study that you retweeted in preparation for your appearance today, is that a newer study than one we've discussed previously that is further evidence that there's positive signs of the effectiveness of the convalescent plasma?
Yep, it's literally hot off the press. So I think it's an Argentinian group that actually did the sorts of studies that people were asking for back in August. And it really shows that I think an elderly, just like if you look at, I haven't looked at the data from the Eli Lilly drug, but they also recommended in older patients early in the course of their disease. And that's exactly what this paper is, a new paper, just accepted for publication, shows in older people, if they get convalescent plasma with high titers of antibody early, that reduces the amount of hospitalization or severe respiratory disease by about 50%. So these are the things that we'll need
and in the interim,
we have widespread, you know, vaccination to help us curb this.
Some medical big shot, I thought, made the prediction, and it's a dangerous one, I guess you could say, because who knows, but that he predicts that by May, we should be able to return to what he classified as relative normalcy. Is that a prediction time-wise you're comfortable with? Do you think it's a little dangerous to go down that road, or what do you make of that?
You know, how far down that road we will be, I don't know. But I do think that by the middle of 2021, we'll feel if societally, like, we have a much better handle on this. Now, how far that is to normal, you know, there could be hiccups along the way. There's still things we don't know about the vaccines in terms of how long they will work. But, I would agree with that. I think that it's, but it's hard to be absolute just because it's going to be a gradual process. Flip side is, I remember 6 months ago, optimistically, we were saying, you know, by mid-2021, we'd have a vaccine.
You're right.
So, I mean, I think with the amount of collaboration we're seeing across healthcare, you know, I think anything is, not anything's possible, but it is quite possible that we'll have a real good handle on this problem by the middle of next year.
Everybody wants to believe that this is a, this is actually U.S. medicine at its best. What seems to be in front of us regarding this timetable being, like you said, moved up a lot faster, and even the effectiveness, if it holds up, percentage-wise, being better than maybe what was predicted on the front end. On the other hand, we've got people that we've talked to over the years, including Gerald Posner, who's got a great book out called Pharma, who reminds us that pharma can't always be trusted. It hasn't always made the right decision. It has been caught in some very compromising positions in the past. So maybe, I don't know if this is a question you're comfortable answering, but I'll ask it nevertheless. We want it so bad to be, we've got our answers, we've got our solutions, because everybody is desperate to get out of this COVID-19 winter. Does that give you any pause? I mean, are we going too fast? Are the protocols in place? Are they still, can they be trusted? Or are we all kind of cutting corners? Not because we're trying to be irresponsible, but because there's so much at stake here that needs backstop, that needs people to help, you know, just throw up their hands a little bit and say, whoa, we got to slow this down a little bit, as much as that's the last thing anybody wants to hear.
Well, I think number one is that going into this, the United States really, and U.S. healthcare was not perfect, but it certainly was seen as a leader globally in innovation. You know, that the American, truly the American spirit and scientific community really helped drive much of healthcare innovation in the world. And I think that we have risen to the challenge in that regard. The flip side is, to your point, we are in a pandemic, and so, look, I mean, as a lot of people point out, you know, this latest round of social distancing and closures is difficult for everyone to stomach, myself included. So we're really working against the clock, which means we're making decisions under duress. Is it possible that, in retrospect, some of those we could look back on and say we should have given it more time, whether it's a vaccine? I guess that's possible. I personally don't feel like we're cutting corners. I feel like we're acting appropriately in a time of emergency to do as much as we can to ensure safety, recognizing also that to not try and do things to reopen society has a huge cost in and of itself. So, you know, time will tell, I guess. But right now, I feel like the right balance is being struck.
Austin, Texas guy with an interesting email. I've heard much dismissing today of the results of the AstraZeneca vaccine trial as only 70% effective. Also, as a layperson, it appears to me that this vaccine is far more practical than the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines in terms of storage temperature requirements and cost/scalability of production. Isn't the prospect of vaccinating billions at 70% efficacy better than vaccinating millions at 90%? And they are not, he says, mutually exclusive. To Austin, Texas guy, you would say what?
Well, in fairness, Dan, I haven't looked at the data that came out today from the AstraZeneca trial, but I would say, actually, you know, I agree that that vaccine is, look, it's a more established vaccine technology that was used. So remember, for a vaccine to be effective, people have to be willing to take it. And so I think there are people who are cynical or skeptical or have reservations about using the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines because it's a completely new technology that has not been used before in humans. So there might be some people that are a lot more comfortable saying, look, give me the vaccine, even if it's 70% versus 90%. I want one that I know has been used before in humans, and we know all not only what happens in 2 months, but what happens in 2 years. So, and 70% is a lot better than zero. And, you know, we got we got billions of people that need to get vaccinated as soon as possible if we really want to hit the herd immunity that will stem the tide. So I don't disagree with that point of view.
Let me ask you, we got Thanksgiving on Thursday, and I got a few emails on this in preparation as we got closer to the holiday from people just, I think, in my case, just trying to be honest with me. And they're saying, look, I understand the recommendations. I understand what we're being warned out of and what we, you know, shouldn't be doing according to the medical experts. We all know what the numbers have been, certainly within this state and a lot of other places as well. But I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to be with family members and they, even from other towns, because there's a mental health component of this for me as someone who lives alone. In a couple cases, that's what the email said. They said, I'm not proud of it, but that's what I'm going to do. And I'm trying to balance out the concerns that the health community has with my own concerns about mental health, and I'm going to do it. So we know people are going to do that, right? So to those mm-hmm. who are, even if you would recommend they work against that, are there tips that you would say, all right, if you're not going to pay attention to what the advisory is in this case, here's a way to, within your decision, even if you consider it irresponsible all told, to be as responsible as possible within that. Are there guidelines? Are there things you would say?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think people need to make informed choices. That's the most important thing, because I can't say what the balance is for someone in making a choice like this. Yep. I think we talked about this before. You could argue, well, if the elderly, not include the elderly. Well, let's face it. For many of the elderly, we're thinking about this might be our last holiday with them, right?
Right.
So, and I noticed that I had a media event today, which I almost missed, for a variety of reasons. But I see that Channel 9 picked up on, my comment that, a COVID test does not mean, a negative test doesn't give you carte blanche to say, well, I don't have it. So make an informed choice. Decide if it's really important for you to get together, just really be thoughtful. Don't say, well, I had a test, so I don't have to worry about it. The test, negative test decreases your risk, but it doesn't give you an absolute certainty. So then you have to decide, how important is that meal to you? If it's important to be together and there's someone in there that you really wouldn't want to have COVID, and you would worry about, then just get together and don't eat, or mm-hmm. just think about, if there's someone that's back from college and has been in a region with, I say that because many, like Eau Claire is an area with a lot of cases, think, does that person need to be there? If so, do they need to eat with people? Because honestly, it really is contact without masks for extended period of time that really seems to be the risky thing. So just keep that in mind as you plan your holidays. And so because it is a really important time. And look, depression and mental health issues are already a problem, can be a problem this time of year. And I would think we'll be more so with the sense of isolation that we're feeling from COVID. So I don't want to just tell people I can't have a cookie cutter answer that we'll just don't get together. Just be mindful of the risk and be mindful and really be mindful of the people you're with. Because the sad stories are when there are people that really are at high risk for bad COVID and if they would get it at an event like that. So you just trying to think that through and balance what the risks are with what your personal situation is. Just be thoughtful. Don't just, the easy thing is to say COVID is overblown. I'm not going to worry about it. To hell with it. That's not an informed way. Just think about it and make the best choice that you can.
Very well stated. One other email I wanted to run by you, and it was from a person who worked or works in the restaurant industry. And they believe that one of the key strategic mistakes that was made, let's say, well, in his own experience in this state months ago, is part of what has put us in the place that we are now. It was his opinion. In fact, I think he used the Nashville example, where apparently in Nashville, the way it's been at least for a while is that if you go to a bar/restaurant, you can't belly up to the bar. You have to sit at a table where there's still some effort apparently to create some measure of distance. And that he believes for a long stretch of time in Minnesota, that was the biggest thing he observed that screwed us up was there was, you know, mass groupings at a bar, around the bar, bellying up to the bar, in a way that made this particular outcome inevitable. And that if we'd been more careful then about that, not closing the restaurants and bars, but limiting the thing in that way, we'd be in a better position. I know, I'm sure there's probably bar owners out there saying, well, you're killing us that way. We have no chance to survive economically if you don't let people belly up to the bar. Is that a distinction that's meaningful to you, or that it should have been part of our discussion, or is it a distinction without a difference?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's so easy to look at things in retrospect and deconstruct and reconstruct. But I will tell you just personally, when I have been out, I'm not morbidly afraid of going out.
Right.
I have, was when restaurants are open, I've gone with my family and met my adult children in Minneapolis, St. Paul area and gone out. But when I go into establishments where the bars are open, I get a little nervous. It's because if you just look, the behavior at a bar is just human nature.
Yep.
When you're at a bar, you know, you tend to sit close, you tend to talk close, you tend to get into vigorous debates and other things.
Yeah.
And so, and truly those are the things that create the droplets that carry the virus. So I personally would agree with that. I know that the restaurants that a lot of their margin and profit are in alcohol sales. So I get that. But I do think that now would we be at a different spot? That I don't know. But I do think that just personally, that's why I get a little nervous about when I see the bars open in establishments, because I just watch what people are doing and you just can't help it. I mean, that's the fun of bellying up to the bar is being really social and close, but that's unfortunately the kind of way that this virus spreads.
Last item is on the hospitals. We, you know, the numbers continue to indicate that we're close to full. Do you have any updated numbers via your contacts or the people who monitor that sort of thing at Mayo Clinic? Where are we right now?
I think we're still in a reasonable spot. I mean, we're full, and it's a concern. There really is no lax capacity. You know, if the water rises much higher, it's kind of at the top of the dike here. But right now, we're doing okay. I think the planning that we put in at Mayo and at other health systems across the state has been time well spent to help us manage this. That's why the outpatient infusion therapy at Mayo, it will be convenient for patients. But the other thing is that, you know, when someone gets remdesivir, they feel better at day two, but it's 5 days of intravenous therapy. Now we might be able to send those people home at day two, so they have 3 days at home, and we have more capacity in the hospital. So we'll continue to make those sorts of adaptations. I think if we can manage this most recent surge, we will be okay.
Thanks for the time, as always, man. Have a great Thanksgiving. If we don't talk before then, and we will be in touch.
Yeah, well, and I just want to say thank you, Dan and Justin, for having me on this last many months. I've really appreciated the opportunity, and thank you for everyone who's interacted with me on Twitter, and I just wish everyone a safe and restful and joyful Thanksgiving.
Well, we kid around a lot about this because we like doing that, but I think I've told you this before, but I'll tell you again on air. The number of emails over the months I've received from people who have respected your approach on this thing, I don't know that we've ever had a guest that has elicited that kind of reaction, given the circumstances and the fears that are there. And so that, to that extent, we very much are thankful and appreciative of what you've given us, and your willingness to basically be on call for us has not gone unnoticed, and especially from the listeners as well. I there's a lot of listeners who get turned off because they think people have certain agendas, whether they do or not. That's what they think. And I think you've been able to artfully rise above that, to the extent that that's what I get most. It's like, this is one of the few guys that I can listen to on this subject. So thanks again for helping us.
Well, thanks for that. That's awesome.
We'll be in touch. Thanks, sir.
Thanks.
That is Bill Maurice, Mayo Clinic big knocker, William Maurice, if you do not have a good vibe with him. I promise a late return to the A Sports topic, your Minnesota Vikings, and what happened yesterday at the People's Stadium. We'll revisit it, and we will dare, yes, I say dare, to criticize Kirk Cousins.
Holidays are here. It's time for your new KFAN Christmas sweater. Get 25% off with our Black Friday sale, which is happening right now. Check out all the designs and some State Fair t-shirts, by the way. Get your Black Friday deal in the Pro Shop at KFAN.com.
Here we go. Fourth and six from the 29 for the Vikings, trailing by three. A minute 24 to go. Cousins takes the snap, rolls out to the right, in trouble, heaves it up, flag on the play, dropped by a member of the Cowboys secondary, flag on the play.
That was a shoe.
Well, it would be nice if they called something, period.
I've been told that that is a shoe, not a flag. Yes, indeed it is.
Are you kidding me? That was Thielen's gold shoe, not a flag.
That is correct.
Oh, my heavens. The Dallas Cowboys have beaten the Minnesota Vikings, stopping a three-game winning streak.
Yeah, we all got confused because on the TV, they superimposed the penalty.
Yeah, the flag.
Because they saw yellow, and it turned out to be Thielen's shoe, not a hanky.
Are you kidding
when
me?
When we needed a hanky. So, is it sacrilegious to in any way criticize Kirk Cousins in particular, or the Vikings offense in general, in a game in which there was a stretch in the second half where they were virtually perfect? I mean, and Cousins had a perfect quarterback ranking. I'm not going to apologize for saying, yeah, I still think it's okay. It may seem outrageous, given the number of points that we scored, given how poorly the defense played, but you got two possessions to finish the game. And actually, the first one was when you were ahead and you couldn't move the ball. You got one first down. And the last time you got the ball, once again, you didn't have to score seven. You had to score three against a defense that had been looked awfully vulnerable up until then. So what happened? Their defense rose up and they met our offense, and our offense didn't handle it. 2 for 7, 16 yards, last two possessions for Cousins. It's got to be part of the resume. It's got to be part of the deal. Now, I'll listen to people who say, including Ben Lieber, well, I didn't particularly like what we had going there offensively. I'm not even sure Cousins had very many good options there. Maybe. That may be part of the deal as well. So if you want to broaden it out, broaden it out. But you can't leave it out. If you know your team is built really at this point more around your offense than your defense, you've got to finish the game. We didn't finish the game. They finished the game. The last time they got the ball offensively needing to score, they scored.
Including a fourth down play.
Including a fourth down play, which was, I think, fairly well defended. That was the pass across the field to the left sidelines to, who was the receiver? It was Cooper.
Amari Cooper, yeah.
It was a nice throw, and I think it was a nice catch and a nice pattern. I don't even think it was that badly defended. But the last two times we got the ball, they rose up. So you don't get consolation points for having a stretch of that game where it looked like our offense was just about unstoppable. If you have to have one more drive to win, you got to have one more drive to win. And in this case, it's a drive to tie. And it's not the first time we've been in this position. There were a lot of similarities between this game and the Titans game. Now, we didn't look as pear-shaped at the end of this game as we did the Titans game, but we were really no more effective. And it looked to me like whether it was all the only choice that Cousins had or a bad choice he made, they were tough completions. It did not look like he found people who were open. Maybe there weren't any. Maybe the patterns put him at a disadvantage. Whatever it is, blame whoever you want, but you didn't finish it. It doesn't matter that you got 28 points if they get 31. And what the best quarterbacks and the best offenses know is they don't fall back on, well, that's unfair. We did our part. Well, relative to a flawed defense, yes, but that's the nature of this team right now. And there was, again, you weren't playing against the 85 Bears or the, what year was the Ravens? It was the Ravens defense.
2000.
Mm-hmm. Ravens defense. They may have felt a little bit more confident as the game went on, and like we got a chance to win a ball game, but they've been a mess, and they had been a mess earlier in the game. So when that gets factored in, I think it should be factored in. It's not any sort of I said last week Cousins played really, really well. I thought he did. And for much of this game, he was virtually flawless. It feels like he's figured something out. But if he has, he and or Kubiak and or everybody associated with his offense, they have to figure out how to finish it. Because in several games, including the Tennessee game and this one, no matter how good we looked until then, when we got down to the final few minutes, we were futile again. We couldn't get anything done. And the play calling also might, as I said, have something to do with that. I'm not going to put that all on the QB, but it all counts. It's all part of how you evaluate, as we quoted liberally from the Gessling piece that's online now about some of the numbers the last 2 minutes of the game. And leave Mahomes out if you want. Leave Aaron Rodgers out. Take them out, and statistically and analytically, Cousins is still too far down the list in terms of his quarterback rating in those positions for me to say he's on his way to potentially being a factor for MVP.
We are still doing at Cousins Condo some type of Thanksgiving week sale. It was going to be a lot more enticing, I think, until those final couple of drives. When he dropped that one in on Jefferson.
Yeah, it was a great play.
Beautiful throw.
Yes.
Everyone's going nuts, and you think, all right, that's the ball game right there. How can the Cowboys come back from that? Yeah, if I was Wayne Larrabee, I might have said there is your dagger. We had a really nice deal at Cousins Condo ready to roll out. We're still going to do something, but I'm not sure it's going to have the same. Not going to have the same bite.
The Fan. It's the Bumper to Bumper Show Wrap.
I want to thank Mayo Clinic Big Knocker Bill Maurice, who joined us in the 5. Andre Patterson, Vikings defensive coordinator, who joined us in the 4. And Ben Lieber, who joined us in the 3. Lots of Vikings discussion early, middle, and late as well. Tomorrow is Johnny Athletic Day, among other things. John Athletic. Short week for us with Thanksgiving, of course, on Thursday. And then we're both off on Friday for different reasons. Guardsy will be working or on his way to Madison. I will be, I think, going to get the tree. More on that later in the week on some controversy surrounding exactly that. Best of podcast, always available to you. Vikings rewind tonight, and then it'll be Monday Night Football. Good matchup, Rams at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay as well. CNBC tweet. I'll just read it. President Trump is worried that his campaign's legal team, which is being led by his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, is comprised of, quote, fools that are making him look bad.
Excuse me?
I think it's a legitimate concern.
Alert the media, Lindbergh baby, or would that be genie out of bottle? Or maybe a little bit of both? That just makes me laugh.
He's concerned about it.
Makes me chuckle.
Has he concluded it, or is he just concerned?
He's concerned about it. He thinks it's making him look bad. Because if it were up to him, he wouldn't look that bad. But these clowns who presumably he hired or who he agreed to, they're making him look bad. He'd look a lot better without them.
Who running knows? Out of time.
Had no idea. It's over now. A couple more challenges lost in court.
Sounds like they're starting the transition now.
Michigan has declared, so they say.
Not buying
proof
it.
Will be in the pudding, as Denny Green once said. Enjoy the rest of your Monday night. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Where are we, America?